Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. Thank you all for being here. Tonight is August 11th, 2015, and the time right now is 7 p.m. Ms. Smoot, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cutaback, Camp, Davis, Gamble, and Gehring.
Thank you. And we had received word a week or two ago that Councilmember Rasmussen would not be here this evening, so unless there is disagreement, we will consider him excused. Councilmember Davis, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God,
thank you. Before we continue with the agenda, we are going to move, unless there's disagreement from council, new business item number two. That's AB 15-142, discussion transportation impact fees, to follow unfinished business item number two, which is AB 138, 2015 comprehensive plan update. We have a consultant in the audience and would like to have that person earlier on the agenda.
Very good.
Okay. All right, with that change noted, I am pleased to say that we have two presentations this evening. The first presentation is from our representative, Dan Christensen. Representative Christensen, please come forward. Thank you.
Whoa.
Is this on?
Powerful man.
When you're done, will you be dropping that too?
Test, test. This is now. Is it on?
Yep.
Okay. I'm the only one who can't hear myself. Well, thank you very much for having me here this evening. I was asked if I would drop by. Thank you, Elizabeth, for the invitation. I was asked to give an update as to what happened in the state's record-long session. I spent nearly 7 months of my life, and I'll never get back, down in Olympia this year. We were supposed to get out at the end of April, and hence didn't get out until the middle of July. And so it was a long trudge through the mud down there. But one of the things I do want to say is I want to thank you all, because this was probably also one of the more interactive years we've had with the city of Monroe and us down in the legislature as well. We had a lot of big issues that we talked about. Most of you, if not all of you, most of you were in my office. Kurt, I don't know if you made it this year.
I did not make it this year.
Okay. I think the rest of you, if I'm not mistaken, did. Anyway, but there were several issues that were a big issue for us to deal with. The marijuana issue is something that I know, Mayor, you brought up to me on several occasions, making sure that we were cognizant of the fact that, and sensitive to the fact that our local communities don't necessarily want some flexibility in being able to have some options for them. And so we worked very diligently to make sure that there were still options available for our cities. We've got monies coming from liquor back to communities, some of the money coming from marijuana coming back to the communities, and that was a big deal for me. Last year, the bill died because the marijuana tax bill died because there was nothing in there for local enforcement. And the state wanted every penny of the taxes last year, and this year we were successful in passing a bill that was going to make sure that those communities around the state of Washington that are having to deal with the front lines challenges there, we're also going to have, at least at this point, some limited resources. Hopefully we'll see some changes there, but there are some resources that are going to be coming to the local level. I'd like to start with the big picture. The big issue this year was the budget. My first year in Olympia was 2003. At the time, the operating budget was $23 billion. Big number. This year it was $38 billion. $38 billion. So, you know, seeing that large of an increase over 13 sessions has been an enormous thing for me to have to wrestle with. On the other hand, we've seen a population growth. We have seen a lot of challenges that we've gone through coming out of the 2008, 2009 through about 2013 recessionary cycle that we had. It hit some communities much harder than others. So the challenge that I was dealing with this year with my colleagues, Senator Pearson and Representative Scott, was to make sure that the dozen or so cities we have in the 39th District, predominantly rural, by the way, you're the metropolis of the 39th District, this is the big city of the 39th, is that we were going to take care of our rural communities. And at the end of the day, despite the fact that we went three special sessions well into July, on the positive side, this was the largest yes vote on the state budget we've had in more than 60 years. which is pretty astounding. On the operating budget typically is a pretty partisan budget. 2 years ago, we saw the largest yes vote we've seen in 25 years, and everybody thought that was astounding. But to have more than six decades since we've seen this strong of support for an operating budget, I think says a lot. It meant that we were forced to deal with things that we hadn't dealt with in the past. It meant that we had to talk about the tough things. It was, what's interesting is this: the voters sent to Olympia this year, of the 147 legislators, 74 are Democrats and 73 are Republicans, which is kind of interesting. And I think what the voters told us was, we want a more balanced approach. We want to make sure all four corners of the state are being represented properly. We want to make sure that this isn't just about Seattle and the large, the real metropolitan areas of the state of Washington, but about all of the state of Washington. There's a phrase that I learned when I first showed up in Olympia 13 years ago, and it was very simple. It was called One Washington. It was coined by the late Bill Grant. He was representative from the Walla Walla area. He served nearly 25 years in the legislature and recently passed away. But he was a Democrat from Walla Walla, one of the only Democrats in all of eastern Washington. But he worked very diligently to make sure that all corners of the state, urban, rural, suburban areas of the state, were represented properly. And with the affirmative vote that we got this year, I would have to say this is the closest thing that we've seen in a long time, I know in my lifetime, to a budget that really serves all the corners of the state of Washington, regardless of your level of affluence, regardless of rural, urban, suburban. It was a budget that I supported, and most of my colleagues supported. It was interesting, it was a bipartisan no vote. It wasn't even a partisan no vote. You had Democrats and Republicans voting no. And so it was interesting to see the outcome at the end of the day. And so I think in every budget, as you know, as local legislators here in Monroe, that's your job. You know that there's never a perfect budget. I liken it to my personal budget. I sit there with a checkbook, and I just love to write those checks. You know, there's nothing about my budget I dislike. There is every single organization or affiliation I'm writing that check to, I just adore. Not so true. But you've been hired. We've been hired to govern, and that means making some tough decisions from time to time. And governing means that you're not necessarily going to get your way. I guess my parents were right. You know, you're not always going to get your way, Dan. But there are some issues that I believe are very important to all of us. And you've been elected by your peers. I've been elected, and my colleagues have been elected by our peers from our communities to go and represent us at the local level here, at the state level, and back at the federal level. And I would have to say this year I'm pretty doggone proud of what the outcome was of the budget. Did we get everything we wanted? Absolutely not. Did we get a lot of things we wanted? Absolutely yes. And I guess that makes a better budget, because that means that you're serving a much broader viewpoint of the public that sent us there in the first place. So I think that part of it was very good. Transportation. Oh, boy. $15 million in the budget is coming to Highway 2 for transportation safety projects. It's a drop in the bucket as to what's needed. There's going to be some flexibility to the community along the Highway 2 corridor as to which of the projects we're going to go towards fixing. We have other ways of doing transportation that, given the opportunity, you will be very much involved in that. There are a lot of things brewing in Olympia as to why do we always have to raise gas taxes to pay for transportation projects. We don't. Most states don't. Most states actually use percentages of their operating budget or capital budget for transportation, and we're pushing forward on that. We believe that every 2 years there should be a vote taken on transportation. Highway 2 has been put on the back burner behind Bertha, the Deepwater Tunnel, the Floating Bridge, and every other project you can think of in the greater metropolitan areas of Seattle and Bellevue over the last more than a dozen years. In more than 13 years, two-thirds of the budget has gone into less than a 10-mile diameter area. And less than one-third of the population either works there or lives there. And so what's happened is, because the focus has been in that greater Seattle-Bellevue metropolitan area over the last 13, 14 years, we have done a very poor job of even maintaining the highway system and road system and the safety aspects of Highway 2, for example, out here, and not just in our community, but around the state of Washington. And we need to change how we do that. And that's going to be something that we're looking at. We were given an opportunity to come forward with a presentation this year. It was received very positively. I've worked with the Council of Cities or Association of Cities and Counties on the thought process behind this. And I've talked to colleagues. As a matter of fact, I just got back from Boston less than 2 weeks ago. And I was meeting with legislative leaders from around the United States. All 50 states were there. And it was interesting. I'd never been to Boston before. And the Tea Party took place, I don't know, a couple hundred yards from where I was having my meeting. And, the Boston Tea Party did. And we talked about that. And we talked about, are there better ways to do government? Are there better ways to spend the money? Are there better ways to be better stewards of the hard-earned tax dollars that the public entrusts us with? And I think there are. The time and the time that we've spent over the decades doing business the same old way over and over and over again in this state and other states, and for that matter back in Washington, D.C., I think is something that we need to look at. How do we remodel how we do government? How do we change? You know, people talk about change, but is there substantive change that we can make? And in Washington politics and in how we spend money, absolutely there is. We don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem. It's a priority of how we spend money. And I would challenge each and every one of you, and I actually brought a handout, plenty of for you here at the council, but also in the audience, to take a peek at. And it's a way for you to not only see what we're doing in Olympia, not only communicate with us in Olympia, but also hold us accountable. It's also a way for you to educate yourself. When you've got questions about the budget, when you've got questions about your pet project or whatever it may be, with this sheet here, which is a way of getting in touch with us online, it's communicating with our system. Washington State is known as the most technically advanced communication state in the United States. Might have to do with a little company in Redmond. They helped us out a little bit with some software and hardware. But we actually have legislators from around the United States come to Olympia to see how we interact, technologically speaking, with the public. And you can actually communicate with us while we're on the floor of the House or the Senate. As we're taking votes, in real time, you can be communicating with us saying, Dan, are you crazy? You cannot support this. You can actually do that. And I know, because I get those emails. But, I mean, there are amendments coming before us. And you on the front lines of local government, you're the ones having to deal with the real issues of local government. And so being able to interact with us, even in real time, is very important. It was one of the things that we've done over the course of the last several years. We put a percentage of our budget into advancing our technological communications that we have in Olympia. So not only now can you email us and or talk to our legislative assistants, but they actually, that stuff comes to us on our screens when we're actually taking votes. And so we can respond very quickly. By the way, we also have phones at our desks. And once in a while, I've been known to make an emergency phone call to somebody who just sent me an email for clarification before, make sure they understand what I'm voting on, yeah, what they really are asking for. I wanted to make sure that we left some time for questions, but I think what would be very important for you to know, in the handout that I'm giving to you, you'll also be able to track all the things that I think are good for the Monroe area, the Sky Valley area, for our communities heading up, you know, Sultan, Gold Bar, and Startup, all the way up Stevens Pass. You know, for those of you who are not aware, our district includes three-fourths of Snohomish County. Geographically speaking, believe it or not, it includes almost a fifth of King County. I have one of the largest King County districts. Nobody lives there, but, you know, Sky Comish, hoo-hoo. And then you've also got the ticket booths at Stevens Pass, and our neighbors on the other side of the mountains are a little jealous because we collect all the money in our district, and then we ski in their district, but we get the revenue for it. And then we've also got two-thirds of Skagit County. So the district in Skagit County starts essentially from about Cedar Woolley, between Burlington and Cedar Woolley, and heads all the way up to Okanagan and Chelan County. And so it's an enormous district. It actually used to include half of Whatcom County. I am so glad during redistricting we got rid of our half. No offense to the people up there. There were 1,200 of them in half of Whatcom County, and the largest voter turnout we ever had in 10 years was 18 people. So they were very active, but I met a lot of them despite that. But I wanted to make sure that with the handout here, you know that you'll be able to get any information that you want. You'll be able to communicate with me on specific questions that you have specific to the city here, and I want to make sure I have time for questions.
Sounds good. We'll take your flyers so we give them to Ms. Smoot over there. Thank you. And thank you very much for your presentation and your service. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. Also, yeah, really appreciate your service. A long time down there this year, and certainly feeling for you. Just a question a little bit. I've heard some nutty things about 405 and the new HOV lanes, and I mean, it just sounds... How does something like... actually go through? I mean, I heard it's not even really going to pay for... purposeful congestion, but it still won't quite pay for what they're trying to do. I mean, it just seems insane.
What we're talking about, Kurt, is the hot lanes that they intend on putting on 405.
Right, right. I've seen the test.
You've seen the test signs that are overhead. What will happen is you'll have a good-to-go pass in your windshield, and just like crossing the bridge, you'll have money removed from your account. It's a prepaid account. Some of the differences, though, which I think are very important to acknowledge, is this, is that they are going to be changing it from the carpool lane from two people to three people in the vehicle. Great for soccer moms. I it's a big city. There's a lot of businesses all over the place. It can make it very, very difficult for folks who are trying to get to work and back to take advantage of that. Now, one of the reasons why they bumped it to three instead of two is to encourage people to pay to use the lanes. Everybody in Olympia refers to those lanes as Lexus lanes.
Yeah.
Because it's very expensive. It can be $5, $10 one way. If you decide that you want to use that, and so the type of riders or users of that are going to be those that have got some extra running around money, or they don't frequent some certain coffee shops as often as others do, and so it's going to be a big budget buster for a lot of folks that are going to be commuting down and back or anywhere along the 405 corridor. There was an effort to maintain the population of two ridership in the HOV lanes. It was defeated. We could not get the amendment to hang. And so the only thing that's going to change it right now is a different makeup of the legislature, starting with the Transportation Committee and then going through the legislature. But yeah, it's going to make it very, very difficult and expensive and potentially even slower for people. Now, one thing I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. You are correct. There was a pilot project, Highway 167, which runs between Renton and the Puyallup area. They've been using hot lanes for years. It took more than 10 years after building the hot lanes to bring in enough revenue of users of the hot lanes to pay for just the maintenance. They've never brought in enough money to make one capital budget payment in more than 10 years. And in every other state that has been tried, it's never worked. It has been a money sucker, and all it's done is it's forced people out of their cars, or at least attempted to do that. In most cities, it's failed at that. Most people, the highways just get busy. And so I'm very disturbed by that.
Thank you.
That's great. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. So just for clarification, so even if you're a carpooler, you're still having to pay to use the lane, is that correct?
Yeah, even if you're a carpooler, you have to buy a pass. And what's interesting about the pass is that you have to buy the pass, and it will say on there, there's a code on there that it reads. If you're a carpooler, it's not going to be taking money out of your account. If you have three people, you flip the pass, which is also interesting. You flip the pass to carpool mode. With some kind of I've heard about it, but I haven't actually held one in my hand, where you can flip it over that says, I'm carpooling today. So it's not going to take money out of your account. When you are not carpooling, you flip it the other way, so it takes money out of your account. Well, what came up in Transportation Committee meetings was, okay, is this the honor system?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
So the soccer mom that drives three times a week, as a carpool person, has to have that pass.
She'll have to have the pass, but she's not going to be paying for every trip.
If she's got the right mode, first of all, yes. Okay. Well, thank you. The only thing I have to say is thank you for your service.
Absolutely.
And say the same thing that I told Elizabeth Scott. We appreciate your service. Appreciate being flexible and working, because as you say, I think most people are sick and tired of the partisan politics. Thank you for being flexible on the things that you need to be flexible on, and thank you for being strong on the things you need to be strong on. So, thank you.
Anything further, Council? I'll just go ahead and add that when Gene and I were down in Olympia, you donated 45 minutes of your time, I think, to talking with us about issues here in Monroe, where I was speaking there on behalf of the council, and I truly, truly appreciated that. You were attentive. You listened to what we had to say. You interacted with us. You gave us some ideas of different things that we could do, and that means a lot to our community. So thank you again for your service.
You're welcome. And there is one question I actually have of you, believe it or not. I was just prompted today, this morning, that there's an issue going on between the Department of Transportation and one of the highways and some detours that are going to be taking place during the fair.
Yes.
Can I get some information on that? Because I actually work with the director and the regional director of DOT, and we've actually had a similar problem with some of their construction several years ago. They were doing some things down here by what used to be the Monroe Co-op. I guess it's now the Monroe Co-op.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we had some problems there a few years back, and I had to give the director a call. So if I can be of service there, please let me know.
Gene, we received word from the Chamber of Commerce.
Yes.
Advising us that because of improvements going on 405, that could impact us during fair time. And Gene got on the horn, contacted DOT, and they're putting together another detour route to reflect how to get to Monroe during fair time. So that's what I'm understanding. Gene, do you have anything further on that?
That's absolutely accurate.
Is that been solved then at this point, or do we know?
It's my understanding that the detour times didn't change because it had been planned for the big change over there. But they are putting another detour alternative out there for specifically fair traffic.
Well, let me know because I deal with Lorena Payne all the time. She's the regional director. I actually had to bring her into it a few years ago to motivate people.
Gene will double check sometime this week and be back in touch with you to let you know that things are looking good.
And just if I may, just two final comments. My wife is here tonight. I was away from that's one thing about this job. Kirk and Elizabeth and I, we live away from home. And I know I'm supposed to address you, but sorry, she takes priorities. My wife Shanna is in the green car here. Trying to catch up on time lost. And then I also wanted to thank the veterans behind me as well. We have our godson is a Navy veteran. He's on the GI Bill in college right now. So I want to thank them for their service and being here as well. So thank you, Jeff.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you. And the next item that we have on our agenda is a presentation from the American Legion regarding the proposal for Veterans Memorial at Lake Tai Park. So, Mike, did you want to introduce folks? And thank you. So, Mike Farrell, as you all know, there was a memorial at Memorial Field that was in disrepair. And so we have been working with a couple of organizations, including the American Legion, to find another home for a memorial and maybe consolidate the memorials that are in town. And so they're here tonight to give a presentation on where things are.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, so the representatives from the American Legion are here, and Boyd here can introduce the other members that are here tonight. As the mayor mentioned, we're working with the Monroe School District on this, with their memorial that's World War II, and again, Boyd can tell you, fill you in on his presentation about this. This has been a partnership of the school district with their memorial, the American Legion, who really, really came to the community and reached out to the city, the Monroe Historical Society, and then, of course, there's the students at Monroe High School as well, Monroe Middle School, that were involved in this project. So without any further, I'm going to hand over to Boyd.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. Thank you very much. On behalf of the American Legion, Arthur Kincaid, Post 58, we're here and we thank you for the opportunity. The men behind me are members of the Post. I'm not going to take the time to introduce you to them. There's three of us on a committee that was elected to kind of do some research on this memorial. And how many of you know where that old memorial is? Does everyone know? You don't. Oh, I have a surprise for you. I took a couple of photographs. May I pass these around?
Yes, you may.
You'll notice that the printing is backwards, and I thought, well, we'd do smoke and mirrors tonight. No. Someone had used my printer just before I did that, and I forgot to change it. We have reverse image. This memorial has been at that park for a number of years, since I think 1951. And as you look at the photograph, you'll see it's in disarray, it's falling apart, it's behind a locked gate. And I've spoken with a number of people in Monroe who don't even know that it exists. There's a group of students in Park Place Middle School who took it upon themselves to do some research on this monument under the guidance of Dottie Simone and Tanya Boyle, teachers. So they did the research. They found, actually discovered the names of the men that monument was dedicated to, the men from Monroe who actually gave their lives during World War II. And so at first we wanted to kind of see if we could resurrect a monument, and then we saw that the location was pretty poor. So we began some conversation with Mike and the Parks Department about possible locations. And they've helped us immensely in locating what we think is an ideal spot. So if you look in your folder that's before you, you should see a map, a photograph, actually, of the park. That should be in there somewhere, maybe towards the back. Yes. And if you look, you'll see the ball diamond here, and you'll see the toilets, the building is directly across towards Freiland's Boulevard is a location. There's a park bench there and a garbage can. We talked to the Parks Department about that location, and they said that would be good. That would not interfere with anything that they have to do in terms of maintenance or underground lines or so on. So instead of taking the old monument and trying to reconstruct it, we feel that if we just start with a brand new monument. But what we want to do is take the brass plaque off the existing monument and embed that in the new one. And so if you'll turn your page to, you'll see a couple of drawings that we put together. On one side, it'll say this memorial is dedicated to all who served honorably in the United States Armed Services. And then that'll be black granite. And then it's sitting on another piece of black granite. And across the bottom, it says that our children will know why we are free and who gave us freedom. And that's the front view. And that view, we haven't decided whether that will face the park, probably face the park, but we're not sure. And then on the back side, or on the other side, will be the plaque. If you turn the page, please, you'll see there's a plaque there that says, "We honor the memory of those who gave the service of our country," by Arthur Kincaid, Post 58, the American Legion, Monroe, Washington. That's the brass plaque that's on the existing monument right now. So we're going to see if we can get that off without destroying it. And then whoever does the monument for us has already agreed that they can embed that so it won't be easily removed. And then on each side, you'll see some names. And that's the names of the 18 men that the students came up with, the Park Place Middle School students, the 8th grade class. You can see there, you may not have those names on your copy. Mike may have had an earlier copy. Mike, thank you, Mike, for, by the way, for providing those copies to the community. Thank you. So that's, and then if you look another page or two, on each side of the proposed monument, we're going to have the six emblems of the various services. And those will be etched in granite. They won't be plaques, they'll be actually etched. And I've spoken with two or three monument companies, and they all agree that that's feasible. So that's the monument, and let's see, there should be a photograph I took a photograph and then kind of, with a hokey program, put that black monument in there with some concrete and a little bench around it. So that's kind of what it might look like.
No.
Hopefully you can get an idea. The photograph is actual, the bench and the garbage can. Next to the monument, we are proposing a lighted flagpole, a 30-foot flagpole. And that'll be, with 30 feet, we can put two flags on it. And we have all the engineering specs and so on, so that when it's set in place, it will be set per their engineering specs. I've spoken with a couple of our men in the City Hall, engineers, about the permits, possible permits that are needed and so on. I was told that we probably wouldn't need a permit for the concrete work. That's pretty simple. The only permit that we would need would be for the flagpole, because that's fairly complicated. As a ex-general contractor, I realize, yes, there are permits. So that's pretty much it. If you have questions, I'll field any questions that you might have at this point.
Okay. Thank you very much. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you very much for coming tonight, and thank you all for your service to our country. Very appreciative. A couple of questions.
Yes.
Practical. There's two Navy SEALs. Is there any specific
I think one's for the Navy and one's for the Coast Guard. I think the Coast Guard may be under the Navy, or just maybe an error on my part.
The Marine Corps is the
same. There's two Navy and then a Coast Guard underneath.
Okay.
And then there's Army.
One's for the Marines. If you look, the upper one is the Department of the Navy. That's your Navy. The next one down is the Marine Corps.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that.
That's
yes.
The Marine Corps emblem.
Gotcha.
I just didn't look.
Perfect.
So that's
okay.
What that is.
And then I love the layout of the sign that the memorial that you've got. I love the picture, the placement, and everything. I think it would be great. My question is, if it's sitting here, is it going to be? Is the flagpole tall enough to where at sporting events or other things that go on in that whole section, will it be seen so it can be used as the flag?
Well, that's a good question. I probably will be. That area is kind of on a slope. It's on that grassy area just between the sidewalk along Freilands Boulevard and the parking or the driveway and that park there. So 30 feet's pretty high. When you stand there and look, you can actually almost look. You can look over everything except the building, the toilet building, mm-hmm. that building. So I would think it would be. I haven't actually gone out there and flown a kite or something. Maybe somebody has one of these little drones. We could take some photographs.
Yeah, there you go.
But that's a good question. I don't know.
Just a thought. It'd be cool. It'd be great if it could be high enough to be seen.
Yeah, there's some issues with heights. The higher you go with the flagpole, it has to be designed for the number of flags that you have, as far as the ground conditions, the moisture content. There's just a lot of issues. 30 feet seems to be pretty nominal. It will be lighted with a solar panel, so there's no electricity running to the pole. So I don't really have the answer to that. We can do research on that, I suppose, but if that's an issue.
I just think it's great.
Because the council.
Sir?
Yes, please come forward.
I did the research on the flagpole, and in doing that research, I went to different parts of the park to see what the view would be. And it looks like to me at 30 feet, we are within the parameters of being able to see it from different areas. The only place might be a question would be the county park at the south end.
Sure.
But from our observation points, from what used to be the restaurant and across the lake and so on and so forth, the flag would be visible.
That's great.
So I think we'll probably be okay with that. The other factor is one of the things that the company and the engineer at the
company that I checked with, their indication was because it's an open area, the wind speed is a factor. And so we had to take that into account also. So for the size of the flags, number of flags, so on and so forth. So I think we'll be okay on that.
Wonderful.
Then we'll wait and see after we get it in, right?
Yeah. I think the placement at Lake Tai, everything is just great. I think it's going to be perfect.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yes, sir. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Totally in support. I think this is great. Excited about doing it. It needs to be in a new location where people actually know where it is. In full agreement of that. And being able to use the, hopefully, that embed the old plaque in there. I mean, that really keeps the original with the new. And what a great idea. My daughter was one of the students that was involved in researching a couple
Thank
of people.
You.
So she had a great time doing this, and it was really fun to be at the night. Over at Park Place where they did this. And I guess the question I would have is I'm excited about this. I think other people would be as well. And would there be a way for people to contribute to the cost of it? And if so, how would they do that? And so maybe making sure we can publicize that as well, because I'd certainly like to do that myself.
I think I might have an answer.
Yeah, and looks like you do. So that would be my question.
Yeah, we discussed that at length. Our committee has Russell, who just spoke, and Jerry Taylor, who is right there. Fellow Nebraskan. There are several ways that we've considered that. One is selling bricks with names of supporters, and that would go around the flagpole, and we'd put those around the flagpole. The other way was just contributions, people who don't want to donate. We are a 501c3 organization, so we can give donation receipts, and then they would be tax receivables. And so we plan as an organization to ask for funds and money. In fact, we'd ask you to have a part, because the city is going to be for the city, it's going to be for the residents. So the one thing I'd ask you as a council to consider would be maybe waiving any fees, any permit fees and anything like that. And then perhaps we'll need some support in digging for the base for the monument, the concrete. And we're going to ask Cadman to supply it for free. And so the plan is to get as much community involvement as possible. We have a young man we interviewed last week who's working for his Eagle Scout badge. And he wanted to be involved with the project. And so we said, yes, sure, of course, contingent upon vote approval in September when we meet. And we're going to ask him to maybe put flyers in store windows, and contact people for support. We're going to ask Staples to do it for free, print it for free, of course. And so the Historical Society is involved, and that's really good. And I've spoken at that park doing here. What do we call that?
National.
Yeah.
The National Night Out.
National Night Out. I was taking photographs for the police department, and I spoke with a number of people who had booths, and there's a pretty good interest, a large interest, in fact. They say, "Oh, let us know. We want to be involved." So I don't think that there's going to be much difficulty. I've received some quotes from three different monument companies, and the quotes for the monument itself and the setting of the monument ranges from $6,000 to about $11,000. And then the flagpole is around maybe $3,000 or so. So we're not talking a lot of money, maybe $10,000 in that area. So that's really not a very big budget. I run a nonprofit, and our budget usually runs around $100,000 a year. So,
wow,
it's still a small nonprofit. Any other questions,
Council? Thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for all the work.
Well, thank you.
Excited about it. Yeah.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. The public comment is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Ms. Smoot, do we have anybody that signed in? Okay, is there any member of the public that would like to come forward to speak this evening? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Council, Councilmember Hanford.
Move to approve the consent agenda as listed.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Cutterback. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 6-0. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is unfinished business item number one. This is AB 15134, GMHB compliance extension request regarding East Monroe. And Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Agenda Bill 15-134 addresses a request to the council to authorize the city attorney to make a request to the Growth Management Hearings Board to extend the compliance deadline for the East Monroe Growth Management Hearings Board case. That compliance deadline right now is August 21st, and due to a variety of reasons, whether workload or work on, for example, the comprehensive plan and other issues, staff is requesting that the city council authorize and direct the city attorney to request an extension for up to 6 months is the time period.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. And I appreciate the information and being able to have this on the agenda. Just a quick rundown of what needs to be done. In my understanding, once the draft EIS is put out there, then there's a comment period, is that correct? And there's a fixed period of time where there's comments, and then how long is that period of time where there's comments on the draft?
Okay, so a quick synopsis. You issue the supplemental draft EIS,
right.
30-day comment
30
period.
Days, okay.
And within that 30 days, we plan to have a public hearing to give the public an opportunity to testify. Individuals and agencies can comment on the draft EIS within that 30-day period, and then by state law, we prepare a final EIS, but that final EIS has to have written responses to all the public comment, the oral comment at the public hearing, and the written comments. And then once that EIS is issued, we can move towards having a Planning Commission public hearing on the comprehensive plan amendment and the rezone, and then it would be a standard process where they would make a recommendation to the City Council, and use the City Council would also hold a public hearing.
Okay. And then some sort of the attorney had mentioned before, you know, while we were in open session, the other process, there's legislative action that needs to be done as well associated to this. There's a land use classification, and it's kind of the process we've been through before, going back to the growth, you know, management board, those kinds of things as well. So there's a process there that's involved as well.
And that was
that's been done three times in the last 3 years, and so we know what that one is, but still that's on the calendar as well, is it not?
Correct. So I don't know how many times it's been done in the past 3 years,
right.
But when I said there was a public hearing before the Planning Commission and a public hearing before the City Council, what the Planning Commission is holding the public hearing on is the comprehensive plan amendment and the rezone.
Gotcha.
And then that comes to the City Council, and you also hold a public hearing on
right.
the comprehensive plan amendment and the
okay.
rezone.
I appreciate that. I am not comfortable with a six-month time period. I'll just be straightforward about that. And I understand it's up to, but this is, we've been doing this for years, a long time. And so I'd be much more comfortable with a date of something like December 1st. That's what is it? That's 4 months from now. So with that, just looking at what's left to be done, I don't see why we couldn't be done with everything. The city and the staff needs to be done by that time. That would be my preference. It's certainly open to hear what other council members have to say, but if action was to be taken tonight, then that's the date that I would be in support of as far as moving forward with this. I understand we can't make the 21st, so we have to do something, but there's no need in my mind to kick this down the road. We know what needs to be done. Let's get it done, and setting up a calendar of things going backwards from there. So making sure that can be met. But those are my thoughts on it at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Council members. Member Davis.
Yeah, I just want to agree with the last statement. I don't believe 6 months is required here. I think most of this work is done. I can see that we're not going to make the 21st. I understand that. I understand we've got a lot of issues going on, but I think this should be a priority. And I don't think it should take 6 months. I'd like to see this all wrapped up at the very least by December, what, 1st? Or
it's a Tuesday night, yeah.
Yeah. And I can't see any reason why it shouldn't be. We've we're getting help for planning department, and we've gone ahead and okayed hiring other services or whatever, and it seems to me that this should be the first priority. I understand the comp plan is there, and we can't dodge that, but other than that, there's no other priority than this. This has been over five years now. Nobody else has a higher priority, as I see it, so I would like to see this done as soon as possible, and I certainly need to see it done before this year is out. This should not run into next year under any circumstances, so that's just my feeling about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. I agree with what I've heard. This should be a priority. I'd like to see it completed by December 1st. There's no reason to carry it out any further, and if we do make it a priority, we should be able to accomplish that. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
What happens if we don't ask for an extension?
I don't think there's a good answer to that question, because in a sense you haven't complied with what the Growth Management Hearings Board has asked you to do. So I'm not sure what the answer to that question really is.
Can you comment on that? Because that question actually was asked at the meeting when you were absent, and the attorney was here, and basically if we were to go that option, that we would just inform the Growth Management Board that we would adhere to the, you know, to the ruling, and that basically would cease and desist.
That is an option.
That's the alternate option. I guess the other option that was brought up, and I know that nobody supported that, was just submitting what we have.
Yeah.
And that was, so those are the three. It's either extend, submit what you have, or we comply with what was originally given to us.
Well, obviously, based on my previous votes, I would suggest that we comply with the previous order. I heard council members say that we've been spending 5 years on it. We've been spending 5 years on it. A lot of staff time. There's more. I heard a couple of council members say this is the highest priority. You know, that's debatable, and I happen to disagree with that. I think there's lots of other priorities, so that's my feedback.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, and no surprise there. I would also support what the GMA has already, Growth Management Board has already said. And I guess some of the questions that I have, though, is that if we do go down the road, I mean, when this was approved the last time, we didn't really have, there was no budget for the cost that's associated, you know, of what we've been doing, working with the attorney, working with, the EIS. With our contract vendors, would like to see that breakdown, and I would assume the costs were associated with that, and were talked about at that time. If it was the 6 months that we went with, that would go into fiscal 16 out of 15. So what have we spent already? What would be the remaining costs associated with going down that path of continuing asking for an extension? So those would be two questions there. And then the final one is that when we were in the last meeting, there was a very strong opinion from the attorney and from city staff that 6 months is what was needed. So I guess what would be the, is there any change in that direction?
I think a better way to say it is that you don't want to be in a position to have to go back, if you can avoid it, to the hearings board and asking for another extension. So that's why it was written as up to 6 months, because that's consistent with the prior extension request.
Okay. And that was the, if I remember correctly, that was the attorney's position as well, because I specifically asked that. It's in the record. All right. Thanks.
Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. Yeah, I just want to comment on that. I spoke with the attorney specifically, and he thought that I asked him, and 6 months was not from him. 6 months was a staff number. It was not a number that he proposed himself. So just want to make sure that was clear. With that, I want to go ahead and make a motion on this. I want to move to authorize and direct the city attorney to request an extension of the Growth Management Hearing Board's compliance deadline, case number 14-3-006C, for an additional period up to December 1st, 2015, and to take all necessary and appropriate measures related to this action.
Second.
All right, I have a first from Councilmember Gearing and was a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I just want to clarify. It was his recommendation that that would be the best from a perspective of, it's in the rec, I mean, we can listen to the tape.
Indeed.
The attorney advised that, hey, we don't want to go back.
Absolutely agree with that. Yes.
That was what my statement was.
Okay, very good then. I appreciate the clarification.
Okay, still open for discussion. Councilmember Cutterback.
Yeah, I guess my thoughts on that are, if the staff are asking for 6 months, and I apologize, I wasn't here for the discussion on the 28th, but listening to what Councilmember Gamble said, I mean, staff know the amount of work that they need, the time that they need to do it. We're behind on the comp plan. We've got more work to do. We don't know. Hopefully it will be done by the end of September. I mean, there's lots of issues, so I'll be not voting for the motion for December 1st based on that.
Okay. Any further discussion? Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I think we owe the applicant due diligence to try and get this taken care of as soon as possible, so it's a priority. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any other discussion? Okay. There's a motion on the floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes 4-2 with Councilmembers Cutterback and Gamble voting against. All right. Thank you. We'll go ahead and move on to the next item. The next item on the agenda is unfinished business item number 2. This is AB 15138, 2015 Comprehensive Plan Update. Mr. Osaki.
Well, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, well, that's warming up. Let me give you a little bit of what I plan to discuss tonight. Just as a bit of background and just as an update, the Planning Commission met last night. Last week, the consultant gave the city basically a revised version of the entire comprehensive plan, recommending the work that the Planning Commission has done to date. The Planning Commission reviewed Chapter 2 last night, and Chapter 2 is all the goals and policies and all the action items. It's really the substantive part of the comprehensive plan, and they made some additional edits, and those edits have been passed back to the consultant. And the balance of the time that the Planning Commission will be looking at the comprehensive plan is looking at all the other additional chapters now that have all been revised by the consultant, and it's just a matter of time for how long it'll take the Planning Commission to review that document and to get you a recommendation. One of the items that the Planning Commission spent a fair amount of time on was the transportation element. And in your packet tonight, you have the transportation element, but what that transportation chapter element is actually from the April 3rd or April 2nd review draft. So that has since been outdated. But I want to talk a little bit about the transportation element tonight, because the consultant who will follow me in terms of the agenda item that's been moved up actually is a consultant that prepared the transportation plan and transportation element in the comprehensive plan. And I know tonight he's going to talk about impact fees, and what I want to do just to kind of lead into that is just to kind of give the council a broad sense of what's in the transportation chapter and the transportation element. So basically, the transportation chapter and transportation plan, there's a transportation plan in the comprehensive plan, and that's a fairly detailed technical document that's in the appendix, and then a summary of that is chapter 4, which is called the transportation chapter. Transportation element or chapter is one of the 5 required elements of the Growth Management Act, the others being land use, utilities, capital facilities, and housing. And what does the GMA require when you go through the transportation plan or you go through the transportation chapter? The Growth Management Act requires that the transportation work have a strong relationship to the land use element. The plan has to be internally consistent using all the same data. So the land use plan targets population for Monroe and the urban growth area of about 25,000. It targets an employment target of about 11,700 by 2035. And those numbers have been used to estimate traffic forecasts in the city, in addition to all the regional traffic, and those have been factored into the transportation model as well. Growth Management Act requires that traffic forecasts go out at least 10 years. The City of Monroe Transportation Plan, transportation element, actually goes out to 20 years. And then the transportation plan, which again is in the appendix, you can look at some maps in that particular appendix and you'll see existing and forecasted traffic volumes for various streets in the city. And so if you're interested in knowing what the traffic volume is on a particular arterial street today and want to get a sense of what the forecast is for the transportation volumes on that street to 2035, you'll be able to find that in the transportation plan. Growth Management Act requires inventories, so when you go through the transportation element, you go through the transportation plan, you're going to see a series of maps. And streets, state highways need to be inventoried, arterials need to be discussed. Transit is also a requirement of the transportation element, so you'll see all the transit routes in the city identified and discussion of frequency of service. And then you're going to see sidewalks and bicycle facilities, and the Growth Management Act actually lately has put a high emphasis on non-motorized transportation, so you'll see some maps and inventories of paved trails and bicycle and pedestrian accommodations as well. And then what the GMA Growth Management Act requires, and this begins to lead into the presentation that the consultant will give, identification of levels of service. So my sense is that you may be familiar with levels of service for transportation, typically A to F, A being good, F being heavily congested streets, and local governments need to identify what the level of service that they want to adopt for roads in their particular city. Basically, you're setting a standard for how much congestion you're willing to accept within your community. And from that, the transportation plan identifies project-related needs. So over the next 20 years, if you look in the transportation plan, there's going to be a project listing of the types of projects that are needed to meet current and future demands over that 20-year period. And then to kind of balance that, what the growth management says is, okay, you have your projects now. How much money do you need to construct those projects? And what type of balance do you have now between your financial ability to raise money and the projects that you need to maintain your level of service over that 20-year period? And from that is what you'll hear tonight after my presentation from the consultant. One of those sources of funding are impact fees, and that'll be the basis for his discussion after I'm done right here. And then just very quickly, some of the transportation challenges, and some of these were identified through the public process in developing the comprehensive plan. Lack of bicycle and pedestrian facilities in the city were identified, including pedestrian crossings, especially across US 2 and the railroads. Sidewalk coverage in certain parts of the city were also identified as a transportation challenge within the city. Transit, the limited routes and limited frequencies within the community was then identified by the community as a particular challenge. And then finally, I think you could put that up for every local government funding. We have transportation needs, and how do we pay for it? And so there's discussion within the transportation plan and transportation element on all these particular items. So in general, the transportation element, again, consistent with the land use element, identifies your community needs based on traffic volumes over a period of time, talks about what type of financial resources you have to fund those, and then based on that, it identifies your level of service in terms of how you're able to meet those needs and meet your level of service in your community. And again, one of those sources of funding are impact fees, and after I'm done answering any questions that you have, I'll introduce Don Somdell from Fair and Peers, who actually prepared the transportation plan and has done some impact fee analysis as well.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. I really appreciate the update. Just for future reference, and just a preference for me, I may be the only one that feels so. When there's an attachment on the agenda item, and if it's one of the really outdated April versions, there's really no need.
I know. I apologize for that.
In the packet.
Actually, that was all I had before the other version came out.
This is the old stuff, right? And so, and I know Planning Commission is working very hard, and I do appreciate all the work that goes into putting all these together. But if it's an April version, I think that's more than two or three versions old through which the Planning Commission's been done. Really appreciate the work. And look forward to hearing from the about the impact fees. Thank you.
Any other questions from council? Councilmember Cutterback.
Could I ask you just a question about the LOS?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I can't answer it then.
Yeah.
We have a definite transportation expert here.
Just curious because so a lot of what I hear out there is people want traffic to improve, and then when I read through on the LOS, a lot of it is to just maintain what you already had. And so that's where I find that there's a disconnect because you can see what I say. What I'm saying is that, you know, that's what we hear out there is how can we improve, you know, congestion, traffic flow, but everything that's in the plan talks about just maintaining that level of service. So where do we look at what plan helps us determine how to improve traffic?
I'll try to answer that,
yeah.
And then I think Don's had that question probably thousands of times in his career.
Mr. Osaki, Brad's waving his hands behind you.
Good.
Do you want
to say something?
Sure.
Okay.
You still got the mic, but he's waving
his
hands.
Okay,
basically, there is no plan to improve traffic. Actually, traffic is going to get worse based on our current plan. Because we have set a level of service standard that some streets currently exceed, and there is no requirement in our current planning process to keep those. Basically, everything gets assigned to a C for local access and a D for intersections, and Highway 2 is F.
Yeah.
So that's basically our whole basis of all our planning is based on that, and the reason is because you can't afford to get it better or keep it the way it is if you want to have any growth inside the city limits.
That's why reading through this, I'm like, there's a problem here.
Yeah, no, the city council has established a level of service that is lower than what it is now.
Yeah.
So that's the whole basis of the entire comprehensive plan is to let everything, you know, it gets worse until it hits the level of service that's been adopted by the city council.
Right. And then, so if it gets worse than the level of service that has been adopted by us for certain, whether it's an arterial or collector or whatever, right? Do we have a time frame that we have to fix it?
Like, our plan with this plan is we'll keep it from getting less than the adopted level of service.
So when I read in here, though, and I look at this, that, you know, one of the things that it said where the LOS prior to development is D or better, attempts to maintain LOSD shall be undertaken. And I don't read that as you have to do it. It says you must attempt.
That's the state highway standard.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what DOT requires.
Okay. And then I see where LOS is prior to development is an E, the state will request that LOS E be maintained after development.
Right, because like LOS is E, basically, on state highways, or worse. So the state allows for it to go to E. They would like you to try to keep it a D, but they allow it.
But they allow it to go to E. They allow it to get worse.
Yes.
You try. You have to attempt to do it, but don't necessarily have to.
Correct.
That's where I see a disconnect too. Is you have to attempt to do it, but then don't absolutely have to, and it can get worse. So I don't know. I'm reading through this. That's what the difficulty for me is when I hear that transportation is one of our biggest issues. People complain and they want it to improve, and our plan doesn't really help us do that. And so that's frustrating for me. And that's how I read it. Comment, question. So that's it for now.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. To kind of dovetail with that, going along with that, on the National Night Out Against Crime, when I was there, somebody approached me and brought up the concern of the horrible turn when you go down Blueberry Lane and you want to take a left to go across the railroad tracks that we've talked about in the past. But is that, and I told them, yeah, believe me, I'm frustrated with it too, and it's something that we're thinking about. But how does that play into, so that we can report back to people about this, how will that play into our comprehensive plan? Are those kinds of things even going to be addressed? At what point will those be addressed?
Never.
Never?
Never, because actually the level of service at that does not dip below the required standard. It's really bad sometimes, but overall, it's not bad enough to be required. And basically, there really is nothing to do there because of the signal from the state highway and the railroad. Two things that we can't control that affect the intersection. The way to make it go away is to prohibit left turns there or make it a one-way street going westbound.
Yeah, I told them about the one-way idea that I've talked about. So, okay. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions from council? All right, Mr. Osaki, you've got the floor, so.
Okay, just one last thing I wanted to point out. The Planning Commission did spend a lot of time on the transportation element, and next week I've asked at least the chair of the Planning Commission to come and just talk about some of the items that the Planning Commission is really focused on, and so he can kind of express some of the transportation issues the Planning Commission talked about. And so the other item on the agenda deals with impact fees. Don Samdahl from Perrin Pierce is, again, the company that worked on the transportation plan, transportation element, and do a PowerPoint presentation.
And Mr. Osaki, before you transfer the mic over, Councilmember Guerin.
I just had one more. A planning commissioner reached out to me last night and said there may have been a reference to the North Hill that might have slipped through in their edits last night, and to bring that up. So I know we've talked about that a few times, and just she asked me to bring that to your attention just in case.
Okay.
I wasn't there, couldn't make it, so anyway, just wanted to bring that up. Thanks.
Good evening. I'm Don Samdahl. I'm with the company Perrin Pierce. We're the transportation consultants, been working on the transportation plan. And last time I stood here was probably a few years ago when we updated the previous plan. And since that time, actually, as I was looking through what's been finished and so forth, there's been quite a few transportation projects completed over the past 7 or 8 years. Unfortunately, some have addressed some congestion parts, but it's the growth continues to come too. So it's, it's a matter of saying priorities, and part of what I'm going to be talking to you tonight is kind of what would your preference be in terms of the transportation impact fee program, which was adopted shortly after the transportation plan. I think it was in 2007 or 2008, and that was the first transportation impact fee for the city. It's been in place. The city hasn't done a major update to that program, but has been regularly updating the costs for inflation and so forth. But typically, when you do a full transportation plan update, is the time to go back in and look at what's changed and so forth. And so I'm going to talk briefly about what transportation impact fees are, then talk about the eligible projects that we see this time around, how we would allocate and determine the share that growth in Monroe should pay, and give you some numbers to look at relative to what the current program is providing. You're probably pretty familiar with transportation impact fees. I think the main point here is that these are one-time charges by new development, and the facilities that the funds can go to are capital projects. They can't go to maintenance projects, and these are basically what they call system improvements on the transportation network. We have to account for things like deficiencies and clearly identify what portion of the need for those facilities is due to new growth within the city. So what we did is we have the current impact fee program, which includes a lot of the same projects that are in the proposed new plan. Several of those have been completed. We looked at a number of different sources, including the new plan, to come up with a proposed new list of projects. And we broke them into three categories for your consideration. The first ones we call the base list, and these are projects that are fairly certain that you're going to be implementing over the next several years. Some of them already have funding attached, others are fairly high priority in your system. So that's kind of our base. Now we have a list of what we call contingency projects. These are projects that are identified in the 20-year transportation plan, but they're not currently attached to any kind of funding. So these are ones that normally, and I guess I would suggest you seriously consider including, but if you'd like to be conservative in that matter, we could look at not including those, so I have different costs associated with that. And the third category are completed projects. And there's about 9 projects that have been completed, And the Growth Management Act allows you to keep projects on the list, even though they're completed, because they're still providing capacity for new growth. And so some cities choose to keep them on the list, some don't. And so what I'd like to do now is to show you this, these three different categories and what those mean in terms of the rates. Phrase this, the current program was based off a list of projects that totaled $28 million back in 2008 dollars. And so just to kind of put it in perspective, if you take these base projects, which are the ones I indicated, which are more imminent, and add them to the completed projects, which are on the next slide, that comes out to be about $28 million. So the base list is kind of just that. It's those projects that are pretty likely to be happening in the near future. And then we have this list of contingency projects, which would equal another $9 million. And so together those would be $27 million. Then we have this list of completed projects, which I indicated are about $9 million worth. And so the question is, when you have this new program, which of these projects to include, because it affects the rates. And so this just summarizes the totals depending on how you combine the different groups of projects. So what we do is, once we determine the eligible projects, we then go through and address what are there any deficiencies. And based on the level of service standard and how they were calculated as part of the transportation plan, actually for these facilities, there are no existing deficiencies. There would be in the future if you didn't do anything, but right now they're operating satisfactorily. So we have a zero there, which means that we could allocate most of the cost of these projects to growth if you wanted to. The next thing to consider, though, is whose growth. And so we need to separate out the growth that's happening in Monroe versus all the growth that's happening in the county and other cities, because we can't charge developers in Monroe for growth that's happening out in Sultan or in the county. So we use the city's travel model to look at where the trips are coming and going. And based on that, depending on the mix of projects, about a bit over 50% of the growth impacts on these streets are coming from the new growth within the city and your urban growth area. The rest of it's coming elsewhere. And actually, I wanted to mention, the portion of the projects that are accommodating non-city growth are not something you can charge city impact fees for, but the city has an agreement with Snohomish County to collect a portion of impact fees from county development to account for impacts in the city and vice versa. The remainder of that red box there on the bottom would be money that the city would have to come up with through other sources that are in your funding program, primarily grants. So once we figure out on the left there how much of the projects that are accommodating city growth, it comes out to a dollar amount. Then all we do is we divide that dollar amount by the amount of growth in the city, and we come up with what we call a cost per trip. And it's that cost per trip that goes into your impact fee rate schedule, and it gets converted to a cost per single family house, a cost per square foot of office and retail and so forth. So this is the framework. The question now is, well, what does this mean? What are the numbers? How does it compare with what you have now? And so once we did the math of using the different combinations of projects, I think I'll point the bottom row in that table. Currently, your program, you're charging $2,424 per afternoon peak hour vehicle trip that's generated. So that's kind of, and think of that as kind of your framework. So if you were to replace the current list with just the base list of projects, that the rate would actually go down a bit to about $2,100. If you add in the base projects and a contingency, it comes up to about $3,300, $3,400. And if you put everything together, it comes out to about $3,500. By if we include the completed projects, it actually doesn't go up that much more. One of the things there is we have to account for all the money that you've already collected from impact fees that were spent on those completed projects, so we aren't charging new developers for money that's already been paid for. So based on these numbers, you know, you could generate $10 to $16 million in revenues from impact fees over the next 20 years. The other thing I should point out here, what we do is based on the projects and the other calculations, these are what we call the maximum allowable rates. You couldn't say, well, we want to make it $5,000 a trip and just make it higher. You do have the ability to make it lower if you wanted to with the same list of projects. Some jurisdictions do that. So with this framework, we wanted to get some feedback in before we actually put together a rate study and a proposed revision to the impact fee ordinance in terms of, you know, your reaction to the lists and the rates and so forth. Brad, was there anything you wanted to add on that?
No, I just was thinking there's one other thing we could do. We'd also do base and completed projects, correct?
So yes, we could.
That way.
Or some, you know, you could say, well, we only want to do half the contingency projects.
Right.
The point is, whatever list you have and the impact fees that you collect can only be spent on those projects. So so it's kind of a, you need to make sure that the list and the rates are in balance.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Trying to wrap my head around the completed projects and how we're charging new growth or development for those completed projects. And you said you can't have them pay for stuff that's already been built and already been spent. So what are you charging them for?
You're charging them for use of the remaining, the available capacity that still exists on those facilities. So let's say a completed project, you built a new road.
Okay.
And over the past 5 years, you know, you've got a certain amount of traffic, but it's only used
up
half.
The limit.
Right. And so, you know, when the original program was put together, it was looking out kind of over 20 years, and it was assumed that, well, some development would come in early, and then there'd be some development coming in later. So, so that's the rationale.
So you're having them pay for the capacity that's still available even after the development is done. What if there is no capacity? Can you charge them?
If you determined that there was no, you couldn't, you'd have to take that project off the list. But the projects that are on the completed list, we determined do have spare capacity if you wanted to include that.
Mr. Feilberg?
Just one comment. It's not that you can't collect money for projects that are completed.
Yes.
You can collect the money twice. So
yes.
If in 2008 when we set up, we wanted to collect $100,000 for a project.
Yes.
So far we've collected 50 for future growth. That extra, that other 50 that we haven't collected yet can be projected into the future.
Okay. I was thinking of a project that's already been completed.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's been completed, but when we set the fee in 2008, we said there's going to be, you know, 10,000 trips going to use that.
Yeah.
Only 5,000 of those trips have shown up so far.
Okay.
To pay their portion, we can charge the other 5,000 their share of that project.
Okay. And then just a question, maybe Brad, you can ask this, for the county impact fees, or did we ever receive anything from that?
I haven't gone and looked. I think we've received a little bit. I don't recall anything specific off the top of my head. Usually they have a traffic engineer that does their trip distribution that minimizes the amount of trips that are coming to the city.
Yeah.
Much as when people do things in our city, they do that same thing so they don't have to pay the county money.
All right.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Using the math here, take a single family home being built.
Mm-hmm.
What's the cost to the builder?
Well, right now, based on that 24-24, I think the single family rate's about $2,900.
$2,890.
$2,900 per house. So these would be proportionally, if this rate is 20% higher than the rates.
What's the calculation? I'm sure it's in the fee structure, Brad, but what is the... How does it calculate?
It's there's like five different parameters that they take into account for different kinds of uses, and a number pops out at the end. So if for a single family house, it's about 20% more than the PM peak trip. So it would be, if you did the base project, it would be like $2,400 for a single family house. If you picked all three of them, it would be $2,600-$2,700. It'd be about $4,100.
So we would be increasing. If we switched, if we switch from what we're currently doing today, that'd be
No matter what we're doing, we're going to switch from what we're doing today. So,
but
if you go with just the base, you'd be cheaper than what we are today.
You go just with the base,
right?
You say current program is $2,424.
Right.
I see what you're saying. Base project is $2,000. If you go to one of the other ones, it'd be a significant increase.
Correct.
Councilmember Gehring?
I just want to make sure I'm clear on what, are you just looking for council feedback on this? Because I can certainly give that. I don't know if there's no action necessarily that you're looking for.
Discussion and the idea, it's similar to the utilities. We don't really need to know until the beginning of September what we have to do so we get all the ordinances in place for the beginning of the year. But you want to minimize cost of development or maximize the amount of revenue we have to improve road systems. So, and the one other issue that hasn't been touched on is that if we don't have enough money to do the necessary improvements to keep the level of service from falling below what has been adopted or will be adopted if you change your mind in the comp plan, then basically you can't have any more houses in town, or that specific development is going to have to spend a whole bunch of money to improve that intersection all by themselves.
Okay, and I got a little bit lost on what you just said there. I want to make sure that we're still very development friendly with whatever we change. Being open for business and being a town that doesn't have exorbitant fees, and making sure that we, that is something that we're competitive, where people do want to come here and continue to build houses, is what that's important to me. That is something that is good in general for our economy, for the economy of this town. So from that standpoint, I got a little confused with that. You wouldn't be able to build a house, with what you said there at the end. So
eventually, if you don't collect enough money to do the necessary improvements, somebody's going to come in and say, I want to do a development. And we're going to say, you can't, because the level of service of that intersection or corridor is below the standard.
Okay.
And they would have to just come up with cash to develop, to fix all the improvement. Install all the improvements will be necessary to make the level.
Now I understand what you're saying. Okay, very good. Okay, that makes a little bit more sense now. Very good. Okay. With that being said, I certainly tend towards not one of the higher numbers. certainly the base projects would be my preference. It still is about $2,400. I think is what you had said, where that ends up being for a single family house, perhaps maybe a little bit higher. It's just such a jump from that one to the next one. And then percentage wise, it even goes up from there. Seeing what this puts most of the burden on developers, which I know, we had talked about that rather than the residents, which is certainly a good thing, but it may be something where residents are you know, if they really want to see things done, the Transportation Improvement Board that we have, the district, and whether or not we want to let voters say whether they or not they want to do something there as well to see some of these done, which still allows transportation projects to go through, and not necessarily all on developers. Just another option there as well if we needed to, letting voters decide on that as well. So those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Before we move on, do we have any comparisons for Snohomish County that would be sort of apples to apples?
I don't. We can get those. The county's rates out in this area, I think, are fairly comparable to what you're charging now, but we can provide those.
Would council like to have information
yes,
about?
Please.
Okay. It would be nice to have an apples to apples comparison. The other thing too is that if council opted to do, I don't know, say the second row there, the contingency and base projects, are they able to adopt sort of a discount factor to it?
Yeah, so as I kind of alluded to, one option that might be attractive is, say, you pick the second option there, and that would be your maximum allowable, and then you could say, well, you know, we're going to set the rate at whatever, maybe it's no more than what you're charging now, or you say, well, we'll set that and we'll increase it over 3 years or something like that. That's certainly a possibility.
So you could do like 70% of the 33.80 and get it closer to the 24.24 if my round percentages are...
My professional opinion, not relating to the rates at all, is to the extent we can bring in more of the projects into the list, it gives you more flexibility on where you can spend the money, which it just so.
It also, allows you to have greater flexibility in grant opportunities. If there's a grant for one of the projects on the contingency list, you can say, hey, it's on our list, and get the money for it.
Okay,
so by bringing in more projects into the list, but putting it on the contingency list, but not funding the contingency list, allows you to get to take advantage of grant dollars and whatnot. Got it. Okay, Councilmember Gamble, and then Councilmember, who's not Rasmussen today, Hanford.
Rasmussen.
Yes. Councilmember Gamble.
Asford. So I guess, thank you, that's what I was looking for was a comparison, but I also want to, because I think we all want to be development friendly, and to your point, Brad, I mean, there's a trade-off, yep. But I think we keep looking at these fees individually.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I would really like a view in the aggregate from an understanding of, hey, I want to build a house. How much is it going to cost with it broken down? What are the impact fees, permit fees, and stuff that, you know, hey, out of the gate, I'm a builder, I want to build a house, you know, it's 20 grand off the top. And that what percentage is which, so that we, and then have an understanding that, you know, we're tweaking these fees. There's an impact to what we can do from a roads perspective, what we can do, you know, whatever the fee is, you know, applicable to. And I think we really should be looking at it at a macro level so that we understand, and then how it will impact our ability to be attractive for development. That would be my ask, because I get what you're saying, but I think we need to be looking at how does that impact the whole picture. You know, we raise it 2 grand here, we raise it 1 grand somewhere else, and you know, somewhere else, and it increases the cost by 10-15-20% overall for a builder, then development shuts off. But if we increase here, but we spot somewhere else where we can bring it down so it maintains, because we want to focus on roads, I'm all for that.
Would it be possible, I know that you're going to be bringing back ordinances, and there's been some additional information requested of the Snohomish County numbers, will there be an opportunity for the council to see them in the aggregate? I'd imagine that the ordinances will come forward together, and if they were to select one of these three rows or a fourth row, which you alluded to, the completed projects plus the base projects, and have the contingency list but not factored in, and allow them then to pick up a coefficient, sort of a reduction factor, when they see the aggregate numbers. Is that a realistic scenario?
Yeah, well, we already have that.
Okay.
We've done it for you in the past with the current fees. We just plug in the new numbers. Or
perfect.
There's the five fees we have, and here's the, you know, three different choices you have for each one, and you can pick and choose and say, this is the number we want to be on.
Okay. Perfect.
Cool. Thank you. Anything further?
No, that's it.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah. concur with Councilor McGill, so
okay.
Talk about it, right?
All right, sounds good. So, Councilmember Cutterback.
I agree with having more flexibility on the lift. That makes sense to me to have the contingency on there. One question about the lift. Oak Street is on there. Is that a private street?
Yeah, that's the finishing, you know, Cherney Place. You know,
yeah.
We're journey from Shane Lake to Woods Creek.
Right.
And the ultimate plan is to go from Woods Creek to Old Owen.
Okay, but that still is a private street right
now.
Right, and
part of the cost would be to
buy
it,
okay.
And then upgrade.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so looking then to council, Mr. Feilberg mentioned having a fourth option, which was the completed projects and the base projects.
Right.
To factor in the total amount per vehicle trip. And that was not one of the three choices, was that correct?
The fourth choice,
okay. So that staff can go forward and begin working on something, is that a direction that you'd like to go? The completed projects are actually projects that have not been completed, right? They're on the list and we've collected money toward doing the projects, but the projects in reality have not been completed, but there's money allocated to them. Is that what I understood?
That's pretty much the base list.
That's the base list.
Base list.
Okay, and the completed project list then?
Completed projects are things like the signal at Highway 2 and
Kelsey.
Okay, those
Kelsey main signal, 179 the main signal. Okay. The projects that we have completed, but we spent the money for future capacity, and now the future people could be requested to pay for that.
Oh, okay, so they're paying back.
Paying back, yes.
For work that's already been
kind
done.
Kind of a latecomer agreement.
Latecomers.
Yeah. Or the other one is, you know, if it's... I kind of heard it more of a, this is how much we want to charge as opposed to what we're charging for, just do everything and then do the, you know, 68% or whatever gets the number that is everyone's happy with.
Okay,
that
so...
leaves the maximum flexibility.
Yeah.
Can you go to the chart with the numbers again?
Sure.
Yes.
I just want to make certain.
That's what we do. Yeah.
Okay.
We had a discount before, exactly. Yeah.
So is what's most important then the cost per trip that we're going to eventually charge the developers, or is it the list of projects? Is that the question? Because if the council decides to go with one of those program structures, what are you looking for? A number or one of those choices?
Either one. Because from what I've been hearing from the council, they're more interested in the bottom line number. You know, this is how much it costs, which may not match any of those, and it might be something that is just what they're comfortable with. But if you leave all the projects on the list, it allows us the maximum flexibility for what needs to be done and what we can apply for grant money for.
Okay. All right. Does that sound consistent with what council members wanted then? Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, no, it does. I just wanted to make sure when we talked about the comparison numbers,
yes.
It was you were talking specifically to impact fees.
And yes.
When we talk about the macro conversation,
yes.
For me, I would really like to know
yes.
the cost to build here compared to like a single family resident home.
Okay, for impact fees in the aggregate.
Yep, looking at them all.
Yes, yes, yes.
So not just...
Correct. I made that statement that I did before you talked about the other impact fees.
Okay, great.
And
I just
so,
wanted to make sure because that, to me, from a...
Yep.
How much does it cost to build a house in Snohomish?
Okay, so what staff will do then is we will look to see what the cost would be in Snohomish County and then come back forward with, and we will do it for all the impact fees that are charged by Snohomish County and compare them to all the impact fees charged, no?
No, I was thinking it would be more cities. So
cities.
We did for the water and sewer last week.
Oh,
the same list of cities and same
Snohomish Lake.
How much does it cost to build a house in Snohomish?
That's
correct.
Yes,
Snohomish County. Whatever it was.
Yes, but...
About the cities. Okay. Okay,
yes,
you want it for the cities.
I would say, though, that it wouldn't hurt.
No, because there's something
to know the county. Because
there's something
right
that don't
happen. Because right outside the door is the county, so it wouldn't hurt to know the county. But
okay,
as
much information as
the county.
No, and I get that piece. I get that piece.
Okay. We will do cities that are within a reasonable distance where somebody would decide to locate
yes.
in Monroe versus those cities. And I was referencing county before because they are right outside the city limits. So we will do county and local cities.
Cool.
And we'll have a comparison and then we'll work backwards on the list for maximum flexibility and we will use that approach for all of our impact fees. Perfect. Thank you very much. Anything else? All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next item.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is unfinished business item number 3. This is AB 15139, discussion downtown parking residential units. Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you. On the 21st, you talked about the downtown parking and as a result of a email that was received from a citizen, and she also came in and talked to you. I listened to the tape that was that meeting. It seemed there was two issues. Her, one, she was talking about working the night shift and not being able to move her car in the middle of the day to avoid the 4-hour limit, and also for other people who lived in her apartment building who carpooled, and if two of them left the cars there during the day, the third one drove all three of them, then those two cars would have a problem. So one of the things that is possible is that we could do a residential permit, just done in several cities. I'm familiar with it from Seattle, that, you know, it says accept by permit at the bottom of all the parking and parking signs, and that just somebody gets a permit, and that allows them to park however you want to make it. If it's just, you can park whenever you want there, or, you know, it's 12-hour parking if you have a permit, or, you know, whatever you'd like to do. Mostly it's just the time frame that you're allowed to park during there. So that's basically it in a nutshell, and the council just asked for it to come back so that you could discuss it some more.
Thank you. Council members. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you, and I appreciate that, Brad. So we would need some sort of a way, like proof of where you live, that kind of thing, that you actually live, versus someone just wanting to come in and get a waiver just to be able to park, right? I mean, we want a legitimate... Okay.
Yeah, it depends on what you.
This person actually lives right here, and it's the, yeah. You know, it's an actual area where we're talking about, right? So
yeah.
from that standpoint, you know, where you put the signs, and there's a little bit more study that might need, you know, to go into that. I know that there's the specific corner that we're talking about. You know, when people do live there.
Well, they usually just do it. I'd assume it would be like, you know, the four block area there of Main from Madison or Blakely to Ferry. You know, Hill to Fremont, something like that.
Where we have
the limits, and yeah. It just be accept by permit, because, you know, it's not like assigned to parking spaces, you get that parking space, but
right.
Somewhere in this area you can park.
Okay. I also wouldn't want someone to be penalized for living there as well. So when we're talking about a permit, I worry about some sort of a cost related to that. Just because you live there, I wouldn't want someone to have to pay money to... just to park near where they live.
That's up to you.
Okay, and so maybe that's a difference.
How you want to fund the park?
That's why I'm trying to figure out you shouldn't be penalized, one, for living there, but...
Basically, you just get something, you know, to dangle from the back of your windshield, you know, mirror, or a little thing that goes in the corners, and the same thing if you see all the people who go to the military bases, they have a little thing in the corner.
Exactly.
You can do it.
But I want to make sure that it's not abused, and that it's, you know, people who legitimately... It is people who take the time to come here because it is a concern and voice their concerns, and, you know, those are the people that we want to help. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I agree. The one thing I would want to know, though, is what is the total... Do we know what the total universe is, for lack of a better word, of, you know, what's the potential, how many people would be coming forward, you know, wanting spaces?
No, because we don't know how many people live in each unit.
Right. So
also, there are some units that we probably, unless you want to get really into the building code enforcement, we don't want to know that some of the units are down there.
Correct. Well, I guess my only concern is that, you know, because I agree. I mean, we don't want to be in the punishing game in any way, shape, or form. At the same time, we don't want to create a policy that people that are not using them now all of a sudden have guaranteed parking spots that eat up the exact reason what we're trying to do is to create, you know, parking for the businesses that are downtown. So I just, you know, I'm between the two. I mean, my instant reaction is absolutely, let's do it, you know, let's create the permits, but not knowing, okay, well, what's the full breadth? Is it one per, you know, unit? What if they've got two vehicles? You know, that type of scenario, we'd have to suss that.
Seattle actually does theirs. The first one's free, the second one costs money.
Okay.
The third one costs some more. So if you want to do it that way, or everybody's free, so there's, you know, a multitude of different ways that it can be done.
Per unit?
And there's also guest parking, if someone's been, you know, yeah. overnight company that comes, you know, or daytime company? Do you have guests for, you know, privileges and things like that?
And if I remember correctly, though, that because they wanted to park on Main Street, correct?
No.
They just wanted somewhere on Blakely.
Was it on Blakely?
It was on Blakely, exactly.
Actually, it was Fremont that you were talking about.
Fremont and Blakely is this red spot right here.
It is.
And so, they're not talking about doing it here. Oops, I'm not sure how that moved. We're talking about right there. This is where she lives in that house right there.
So it's technically red right now, which is a short parking spot.
So that would 15, be the other thing is that, you know, is there a designated, I mean, we're discussing, right? So I'm just throwing stuff out there so that we can all chime in. Do you limit it to just, you know, how do we...
Side streets or...
Yeah, side streets, not Main Street, right. You know, type of deal. Maybe that accounts for it, so you don't have to worry. You know, the full population wants to come in, it's okay, because our main we've got a lot of focuses there with the parking spots, but I just wouldn't want to do something that would impact...
The work
that we've done downtown.
Yeah.
But I don't want to ignore, you know, an obvious hardship, because we do want people to carpool too. We're just talking about transportation.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Anything further?
People live in this house.
Councilmember,
I'll just
cut it back.
I was just going to agree. So I think definitely allowing residents to have a permit to park, you know, showing proof of residency where they live, no cost for the first one, I think makes sense. And then not allowing it on Main Street. That's where I was going with, you know, the side streets.
Exactly.
There's still limits there, but with this permit, there wouldn't be a limit for them. But I think on Main Street, we want to keep that from, guess what, from Blakely to, is it, like,
Ferry.
Oh yeah, from Ferry to.
So I would say that.
Oh, actually, maybe even Woods.
Madison.
Just along that Main Street, but the side streets around the corner, all of that residential permits are allowed.
Okay. So I'm hearing an interest in having a residential parking permit, one per unit for free. The second one would be at a charge. Is that correct? And we'll come back with that information, and we'll come back with an area in town, which sounds like it would be West Main, Hill Street, Blakely, North and South, and then I'm not certain if it'd go out to Ferry or Woods. It sounds like Ferry though.
Woods is already all.
Yeah, so. Woods is all.
Okay, but not Main Street.
Right.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and we'll bring back a revision to that resolution, I think. And we'll address that when we get to the extended agenda. Anything further? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. The next item on the agenda is unfinished business item number 4, AB 15140, discussion utility rates. Mr. Feilberg.
So last week we discussed the utility rates and the system development charges, and let's see what my cover sheet says. And I know the council requested to come back for further discussion, and there's also several council members that were absent that night, and so if you have any questions to ask or you just want to discuss amongst yourselves, the mayor will direct us forward.
Council members. Any discussion on the utility rates? Okay, I don't see. Councilmember Cutterback.
This seems like a complicated,
it's a very complicated
issue, especially when we're dealing with water, sewer, and stormwater. And I guess the stormwater part, because that seems pretty easy. We're not looking at really doing any changes. And I think I pretty much agree with. You know, a lot of the stuff that was recommended with the sewer comparison and all of that, it's hard to see when we look at the water rates, and we're higher than, you know, quite a few when we do this change. We're going to be...
No, water state's
the sewer.
Sewer at the very top.
Oh, the sewer is the one that's the top?
Yeah.
Oh,
we're at the top now.
Okay. A couple questions about the, what is it, cubic feet? per foot, okay, or what?
On which one?
On, let me get this right here. Looks like the water. So, because it sounds like the average is 7.
Correct.
That's the average usage,
yes,
for a single family is 7.
Yes.
And we charge them overage if it's over 4.
Correct.
That's our current.
Yes. And that's for the proposed too.
And that's for the proposed.
Yes.
And then is it sewer that we wouldn't be charging overage?
Sewer, we might be charging overage for
single family
or
multi-family.
Yes.
But so we would for others. Okay. And how did they come up with, like, where did they come up with the 4? For if the average is 7, where does
the four has always been 4, and
yeah,
that was 4 back when the average was 10. Basically, it's the it's just cuz, pretty much.
It's
kind of a random thing to give you something for your base without making the base really high, because then people who only use 2 would be paying for 7, but they're only using 2. As opposed to going the other way, and you just have a base charge and no allowance, and everything is overage. So it's kind of just a happy middle ground there for that.
It seemed like with the water, what they're recommending is the revenue recovery of the 55.6%.
Correct.
And that's gonna cause quite an increase for the single family, because the multi-unit is going down.
Correct. Yeah, because the multi-family has been subsidizing single family for years.
Yeah, I mean.
But that's not the basis of the 55%. It's basically not double charging the multifamily.
I get that.
And
so
the change in the percentage is to minimize how much it goes up.
Yes, I get that. Yeah. I mean, I understand that we have to make a change with the way we're handling the multi-unit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to have an effect on the single family.
Right.
It just is.
Yeah.
How much of an effect is what we need to figure out,
mm-hmm,
right? And we have some flexibility in that.
Right.
But even at the 55% or with, mm-hmm, what, it's still going to be a pretty significant increase for the single family.
Correct.
That's all. So I look at this and I go, you know, and I understand it. You're either putting more on the base amount, how much you're collecting, which is more stable revenue, mm-hmm, or you're banking on there's going to be overages and you're making more.
Correct.
And the 55 plays middle of the road versus the 40 or the 68. So, anyways,
And just for a comment on the stability, is if you haven't noticed yet, Everett has requested a voluntary, you know, water conservation of reducing their water consumption by 10%. So that gets you into the problem of, if you don't aren't charging up your base, then you have to raise rates again when people stop using water. Which happens quite often in Seattle when they tell people to conserve, that they have to raise their base rate because they don't have enough revenue anymore.
Because people conserve,
yeah. So we don't want to.
That makes a lot of sense.
Oh, you can conserve and then raise your rates,
yeah,
if you're not using enough water.
Yeah.
So.
That makes a lot of sense. All right, that's it for now.
And now that my computer's come back on, there is the list of policy decisions that need to be made by the council by the beginning of September, so we know what to do with our rates for next year.
Which page was that on?
That's the first page of the agenda bill.
That's on the first page.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in order to implement,
yes,
or not implement.
Okay, that's that one. There were 56 other pages. I thought I was scrolling through.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, Councilmember Gamble, sorry.
So, there was another statement you made, I mean, just in the conservation thing. So, reduce the stability of revenue by reducing the revenue received from the monthly base charge. So, we'd be flying in the face of that if we were, or I should say that we would be doing that, which flies in the face of your comment of, you know, hey, potential of having to raise if we're conserving.
Right. I mean, the other way to do that is you just make a 100% base charge, and, you know, all the cost of operating the system goes in the base charge, and then anything anybody, you know, uses over, it just pays for the water that comes from Everett. But that makes the bill really high, and, you know,
right.
Start with.
So it's finding that you know, where's the happy point?
Right. Yeah.
But the comment on that, so the 7's the average, and we're at 4. We used to be at 10. So through conservation efforts, you said the 7 was the average.
Oh, yeah, that's basically, over the years, the consumption by single-family houses has gone down from 250 gallons a day to 175 gallons
right.
a day.
Right, low-foil toilets, all those different...
Low-foil showers, all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Right. So we're at 7, the base is, you know, 4, and what we were talking about is that, okay, those folks that are below have been, the inequity, they've been paying more, but the average is 7. So a majority are over.
Correct.
I don't know. I'm like Councilmember Cuttaback. I keep going to the number of, you know, the increase of 20 and 30% in your water bill and affecting a significant part of the population. Because a significant piece of that obviously is coming from the overage charges. If the average is 7, then... I don't know if I'm totally for completely abandoning the...
One thing we can do is we can bring this back next week, and council members have additional questions. You can go ahead and send them to me and to Gene. We can get them to Brad. Brad, we do need a decision on this by...
I think September 11th, or 8th, whatever the second council meeting is. I said, policy direction needed by August 25th.
Oh, it's right there.
I said 2 weeks.
it was going to be September 1st, but that's the holiday.
Okay. Is there information that staff could bring back next week to assist the council in the decision? Okay.
You know what?
Yes.
I think what would, because, we've got a ton of numbers here to look at.
Uh-huh.
I've read it quite a bit every time I come back. And I think what would probably be really good is just a really, a table that says, because I know it was in the presentation we had previously, maybe it's in here, where it shows for a single-family home that's averaging 7, right, what's their increase in their bill, their dollar amount going to be? Meaning, here's their bill today, dollars, and then here's their bill tomorrow. Because they should, if I remember correct, Brad, they should realize some sort of reduction on the sewer side.
Page 18 or 19.
That's what, thank you. I remember seeing it.
18 of 19.
Oh. 19 of 56.
There we go.
18 of 56.
In the conclusion.
18 of 56.
You got to look at 19 of 56 is in your bottom left.
PDF page?
30 of 56. You got to go up to
19. Page number on the left hand side would be 19 of 56. Page number on the right hand side would be 18 or 19.
Would be the page number on the what?
The left hand side.
Yeah.
Got it.
No, there's a chart. Keep going.
I got it. 21 and 19. Right there. There we go. This is not matching what I'm seeing on the hand.
Okay. So would council like to? Oh, Councilmember Gamble, do you have anything further? Councilmember Cuttaback.
Well, just if you're looking for some direction, if I look on the cover sheet, the stuff under the sanitary sewer, that all makes sense to me, equalizing the multiplier to 1.5 instead of having 1.5 and 2. That makes sense, Brad. Eliminate the volume rates for single family and multifamily, that makes sense. setting the fixed monthly charge at 0.7 ERU. That makes sense. Reducing the usage allowance from 10 to 5, but doing it phased makes sense instead of one big change in one big year, which I felt was too much. The biggest issue I have is just the water bill of 7.5% increasing, because that's annually.
Yes,
the next 10 years. So it's not just, I mean, when you look at on that page 18 of 19, you know, you see, okay, so 2015, single family water, 3117 goes up in 2016 to 3587, but it's going to increase for the next 10 years. And will it increase that 15% for that group? Because it's 7.5% overall.
No, once you shift.
Okay,
then it'll be 7.5
the rest of the time. Okay, that's what I was looking at, going, oh gosh, is it going to be 15 for them every year? So it equals out to 7.5 overall. But you're saying no.
Correct.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. So, looking at that table, am I understanding this correctly that if I was in the single family numbers there, which, by the way, I'm not even close to that, then my bill would go up $5 next year?
Correct.
And then in 2017, it would go up an additional $5 to $6. We're only going up 4% every year.
I'm doing that.
That's fine. I just want to make sure I understand this.
I can bring that back to you next week too with the numbers.
Yeah, that would be fine. That's what I'm looking for, I think, and maybe this is exactly what Councilmember Gamble is looking for. As a single family homeowner or resident, what am I looking at? So you say $5 next year. Mm-hmm. That sounds great. Let's do it. But I want to know 5 years from now, or 2 years, 3 years from now, is it now $50? Because that's a lot more. So that's what I'm interested in.
It'll go about $3 next year.
So if we can get a chart that has maybe up to, what, 10 years?
I think we did 8.
Okay.
8 years for the water, 6 for the two.
Okay. See what actual numbers are. That would be helpful.
Yep. Okay. Thanks. Welcome, Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate what Councilmember Cuddeback said. I completely agree on the sewer side. I think that's the right way to go. You know, it kind of gets rid of the double counting as well, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I'm just trying to wrap my head around the water piece. So if we could just present it a little bit more like he's talking about, and I guess for some reason I had thought, because I'm looking at the chart here now, and I had thought for some reason that there was an offset on the sewer for the single family side, but it's showing exactly the same. Because if you were being
the single family sewer stays the same.
Because if they were charging overage on sewer, correct, previously, would you have been charged? Because you would have been charged over the five.
Sewer was 10. So if you
sewer was
seven,
10.
You didn't, never
okay,
had
so if you were over 10, then you got charged an overage.
So the average.
There is a certain percent that was over 10%.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's
what's
showing on the. Okay, so that's why this chart isn't matching up against those bar charts that we.
Yeah, because the bar charts are. Yeah.
They shows the whole. That shows the whole population.
Right.
Okay. So there will be those that are
some
going over.
Less, some people pay more.
Because those, I just wanted to make those that are going over the 10, they were going over 10 on the water side too, obviously, because we're using the same meter.
Right.
So they would see an offset a little bit anyway on the sewer. Okay. Thanks.
So we will bring back more information next week that will reflect, in essence, what it looks like for a rate payer, what the bill is going to look like as a result of these changes, and so it makes sense. Okay. Thank you. We'll go ahead and go on to the next item on the agenda. That is new business item number 1, AB 15-141, Discussion, Planning Commission Compensation. Mr. Osaki.
residence is Mr. Brazel, actually.
Oh.
Gene.
Gene, how about you?
I'm trying.
Open it up. Why isn't it opening up? Okay, so I'll ad lib while it's sitting there thinking. Thank you. Finally. Yes, council asked to have this matter brought back. We've done some research. We attached some tables here for you. The one thing that we did realize, based on some experience that Mr. Osaki has had, that some jurisdictions actually put money in place for training for Planning Commission members versus paying, because we are one of the only ones in the state of Washington, actually, that pay their commissioners. So anyway, that information is in front of you this evening. We did include the training portion for your consideration as well. We're just looking for direction.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. Yeah, and I appreciate the information that we've got here. I like the fact that we pay our planning commissioners. They're doing an amazing job. I know they have a little bit more work this year than in years past. Council, we used to be per meeting as well, and we moved away from that. Now we have a salary commission, and I know that's not the same thing here. This is a policy decision. I'd like to see a flat fee as well for our planning commission. Sometimes they have a few meetings, sometimes they have a ton, and I think on the average, $50 a meeting. It was set a long time ago, and from an inflation standpoint, it looks like 21 years ago is the last time that this was ever talked about. I'd like to consider something. Certainly, I want to hear from other council members to the effect, you know, maybe $250 a month, something along those lines. I want to throw that out as a, that's just what you get monthly. And then, you know, rather than a per meeting type of a thing, it doesn't have to be that number, but I'd like at least to throw out one to start a conversation. And then it helps with budgeting as well. It's just going to be, here's what it is. It's not a per meeting thing. It's just a flat, here's what you get a month, as we made the recent switch with council members' salary as well before we had a salary commission. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to see it come back per the requested action and changing that section, the one that's listed. And I'd like to have a flat fee in there, and I'll throw out $250 and see what everybody else thinks.
Councilmember Kemp.
Thank you. Most of the things I was going to say, Councilmember Gehring just suggested, in addition to the $250 salary, I guess, lack of a better term. When I was doing some research and I spoke to one of the salary commission members, a lot of the reasons why they encouraged or decided to convert us to a full salary was to encourage people to get involved with council. But also, I think the reasons they have also apply to the Planning Commission. We expect a lot of our planning commissioners. Independent research, attendance of meetings, and some of these meetings are lasting well into the night. I think it's a positive thing, and as Councilmember Gehring said, it's 21 years? They last had an adjustment. We all know where $50 was 21 years ago. The $250, again, that was just a number that I based on four Mondays a month plus basically a mild raise. That would be the area I'd like to see. And, of course, getting to a salary instead of a per meeting, just to compensate them for the time that they should be spending or they are spending on independent research for the meetings. And that's my point. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Just curious, in the past, has the city had a hard time finding planning commissioners? Had open spots? I know that one of the reasons that we raised initially when we had the control for the salary of council was to get more people to apply and more qualified people to apply. So thinking through for the commissioners, what's...
Could I address that?
Please.
My first meeting before I was appointed to the Planning Commission, they did not have enough for a quorum. And I guess that had happened at least twice before. So they were having a harder time getting planning commissioners to apply or people to apply for planning. In addition to that, there's quite a, there was quite a bit of turnover. I don't know if we still have that issue. Just people coming in, not serving on a full term.
Okay. Yeah, my thought is they have been doing a tremendous amount of work. I'm very appreciative of the work that they have done. And I think we don't, with wanting to continue to grow our city, we don't want to put ourselves in a position where there's, we're trying to fill commissioners' positions. It'd be nice to have it be something that is, they are well represented, they're well compensated, and it's, they feel good about coming to work and doing the work that they're doing. So at the same time, looking at this past, you know, couple of years with the comp that we've been working on, and yeah, this has been a heavy season, right? So, but 3 years from now, 2 years from now, their workload is going to be considerably smaller, and I'm curious to know what, during a slower season, what is the workload? Because I really don't, you were on the commission, I was never on the commission, so I'm just curious.
Councilmember Hanford, to answer your question, last year, last summer, the Planning Commission did not meet. Is that a, Brad, do you recall? It seems to me that the Planning Commission did not meet last summer. So there are times where they meet twice a month. There are times, especially when you're doing comprehensive plan, where you're meeting more frequently. And then there are times where you might meet once a month or you might not meet.
So, I'd love to hear more discussion.
And Councilmember Cutterback?
So it's interesting to look at, and I appreciate all the work that the Planning Commission does, especially what they're doing right now. I mean, they obviously committed civil servants, dedicated and doing a lot of work. But I'm just curious, because this, I think the payment for them was ongoing before I came on. I think, did you say 21 years? Where did you get that from?
1994, it's listed.
Is that what it says in there?
Last time it was updated, yes.
So I don't know if we know the history of why we started paying for them, because when you look at other jurisdictions, it was surprising to me that nobody else really is paying. So I'm not sure why we started that based on kind of what's going on. And I could be way off base, but it would seem like most planning commissions have kind of the same workload and the same duties and responsibilities, and some of these other cities are bigger. And again, I don't know for sure. I would ask Mr. Osaki if he knows if comparable workload from city to city for planning commissions, do they have different duties?
The duties are, well, in general, the duties are signed by state law, and then the duties are signed by municipal code. So the duties that this planning commission is assigned, primarily legislative, some quasi-judicial, are pretty consistent with most other jurisdictions of this size, if not bigger.
Yeah.
And much of the work of a planning commission is dictated, obviously, by state law, because every community is going through this growth management update.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how they manage it and how detailed they get into that. How many meetings they have. So, having been on two planning commissions and having staffed numerous planning commissions, two meetings a month during the normal times is pretty routine.
Yeah.
And then when you have special deadlines that you're trying to meet, it's not unusual to have more than two meetings.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So that's why I just look at this, because when we went through the salary commission, I was one who advocated not politicizing the increase and having a salary commission look at it, and I think that was a wise decision. They looked at other jurisdictions to base on what they felt we should get as a council. So I think it's for me, looking at how they did, it's important for me to look at other jurisdictions to look at kind of what we're doing for Monroe. So, you know, not knowing why we started paying them at $50 way back in 1994, I have no answer to that. I don't know why. And please don't hear that this is taking away from that. I think they don't deserve it, or they're doing a great job and they're putting a lot of time and effort into it. I think we have a lot of different people who are involved in city government and on boards and commissions who also put a lot of time, and not as much as the Planning Commission is right now. I am completely in favor of setting aside money for training for the Planning Commissioners. I think that is incredibly wise. I think it's really surprising to me that we haven't been doing that. I think that's good for the commissioners. I think it's good for the city. It's good for their development. So I'm in favor of setting aside money, paying for whatever training we can send them to on this, but I'm not necessarily in favor of, based on this information, these other jurisdictions increasing their salary. I'm not interested in taking away the $50 a meeting. I feel that would seem punitive, but I'm not necessarily in favor, based on the information we got, what other jurisdictions are doing and increasing it at this point. But I am in favor of setting up a training budget and giving them an opportunity to go to training, which I think can be a great professional development opportunity for them.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Yes. Well, having been on the Planning Commission, I'm awed at the work that they do. I became a part of it not for the money, never considered the money. And I think most of them are in the same thing, that it's their civic duty, and they take pride in doing that, and they do a great job, and they do a lot of work. And when I was on the, what was it, 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, it seemed like we had an incredible amount of work then, and it wasn't necessarily a comp plan or anything like that, but it just seemed that the work we did was pretty in-depth and a bit overwhelming at times. That being said, I definitely agree with your point about training. We really do need to set something up and try and give them as many tools as they that we possibly can to be successful at that. But I have to admit that even though it was only $50 a meeting, I was very appreciative of that, because it did take a lot of time, and there was a lot of, you know, it wasn't just that night and or the, you know, the few hours that we were together that we were looking at this material. We would get packets just like we do here, you know, a week ahead, and we would be going through that material, and it took a lot of time and energy. And so I don't understand why. I'm kind of baffled by other people don't pay their planning commissioners. That seems odd to me, because it does seem that would be quite appropriate to do. And it does seem that more than $50, if $50 was appropriate several years ago, a little bit more would make sense now. Also, I believe that Monroe has grown considerably in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years even. And the amount of work that they're doing today is, I think, expanded considerably also. So we're asking them to do even more on a regular schedule. So I'm not quite sure exactly how much, but I think, first of all, the training is absolutely necessary. But maybe an increase in the fee or their salary or something like that would be appropriate also.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. There was a reference to the Planning Commission not meeting at all last summer. I don't know that that's necessarily their fault. I think there was a difference.
No, it's not.
In the Planning Department at that time, and they should have been meeting. and there weren't, which we're feeling the effects of now with the comp plan being planned. Slammed here at the last second. 21 years is a long time. Again, we attracting people who really want to be involved, not having to be about the money, because it's certainly not right now for $50, but watching their current planning commission, there's a great group of people working together that really want to, you want to be able to retain that. And I know this is, in particular, is an extremely busy year with comprehensive planning, so a little bit of an outlier, and a couple of you have made the points of, you know, what happens in 3 years when there's just not as much, when you really do go back to two. I mean, what if it is two meetings a month? Okay, well, then maybe 250 is a little high. But again, I at least wanted, you know, throwing out something. I think an average that is more than $50 a meeting and something that's a flat fee, I think, is not beyond, I think it passes the smell test to consider something like that, for sure, regardless of whether or not. And I certainly appreciate the point of, hey, nobody else does it, and why do we do it, and getting some more of the background on that as well. But I'm okay with the fact that we do and other people don't. I think that sets us apart in a good way, because we recognize that the need and how important that is. It's an important role. We've had recently people serving there for over 20 years. Before that are people who served for a very long time, because there is influence there. It is important. And it is a public position. While it is appointed, it's still a public position from that standpoint. I think there needs to be, it's different that it doesn't fall under the commission because it's legislative, and so it's up to us to do it. But then, you know, they're not elected, so the political part of it wouldn't be there. The same with the council members. So, I'd like to see it go up. It sounds like we might need a little bit more information. Maybe for next week or the week after or something like that. But I will still be on record saying that I'd like to see it a flat fee, and it should be more than it is now, based on the fact that it's been 21 years. Something that takes average, what happens 3 years from now? It's not the same as now. Every 10 years, it's really busy. But something that represents, one, you know, respect for the work that's done, keeps that position attractive for people filling when there are openings as well. Makes it worth someone's time to take time away from their family to do it. So, thank you.
Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. Just a couple of things. Thank you for hearing from the fencing high points that I hope to address. First, if I'm reading this correctly, we initiated the payment to the planning commissioners in 1978. I don't know what their fee was or what their stipend was at that point. We're just, the 21-year thing was the last raise, essentially, they got in 1994. The other thing is training. I was fortunate to receive training as a planning commissioner at least two, maybe three occasions, paid for by the city. It was very helpful. It helped define my position and what I was supposed to do at the time. I think that's still available. I don't know.
Depends upon what kind of training. If it was a local government offered through the state, that's something that's free. I don't know if you attended APA conferences.
As well, Association of Cities. That was another training. There was a cost involved, and I discovered that. Training trailer should be available, especially if we have the kinds of demands and the types of things that the planning commissioners have been working on. So a combination of a straight salary, some sort of compensation with a training stipend allowance, whatever would be appropriate, something like that might work. I would go in that direction. And I agree, because other cities don't, we have some very high demands for some very high profile issues in this city. And I'd like to see the planning commissioners compensated for their time.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I concur with the training, and it should make the training available and pay them for that. Since they are not elected officials, I feel better that they get paid per meeting or per involvement, because like right now they would be getting paid more for their involvement, and when it slows down, maybe they take the summer off so they don't get paid, and they take it off because they don't need to or something. That makes more sense to me than, yeah, we're still going to pay a every month. So I would feel much more comfortable keeping it at the paper meeting. When we're elected officials, we're representing the city 24/7, and that's why our pay structure makes a whole lot more sense to have just a flat salary as opposed to their position. So that would be my opinion. Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble.
I would agree wholeheartedly with the last statement that you just made, Kevin. I guess I have no problems being, that we want to be the trendsetters on compensating our planning commission, type of deal. But I do agree with the comment of, or the point that you just made. And the other one is just being able to answer the question. I'm like you guys. I want to know why a population of 132,000
doesn't pay. They don't
compensate. I mean, there's got to be a reason why. But these other, these are cities that have, planning and development issues, and knowing because of having done business in those areas and worked with these cities, that they're tackling issues that are just as difficult as ours or more difficult when you're talking Redmond, Bellevue, Kirkland, that sort of thing. So I guess I would just wonder, okay, well then why don't they? Is it just because the population, there's more people, so there's not as big an issue of trying to, find, attract, and, qualified candidates, or what? So I would want to be able to answer that question. And then I had down the paper meeting structure, to me just makes more sense for an appointed role. And then just knowing what the, if we're going to make a recommendation, it hasn't been done in 21 years, we want to up it to 75 or whatever. Mm-hmm. It is, what's the impact of budget? Because I was just thinking of that huge impact. To the budget, and then being able to know that, speak to that, make it a lot easier to answer those questions.
Okay, so I'm hearing a couple things. One, it sounds like there's a consensus to go ahead and do something to increase the pay structure. I'm hearing sort of a 3-3 on whether or not to do it flat per month or per meeting. If I'm hearing that, I'd like to have sort of a motion on what you'd prefer. We'll be bringing back, what I'm understanding is that we'll bring back an ordinance, but we're going to bring back additional information, including why we started doing this and trying to get some understanding on why other jurisdictions don't do it. Is that correct? Also, being able to quantify how much what the impact would be to the general fund. All right, so Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, and you brought up an important piece of the history. I mean, that comment about started paying in 1978.
88,
and amended
94.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay. So what's been the, obviously we started lower. What's been the increase? So that would be good to know that.
Right. If we started, it may have started at zero.
Right. When did it start? Yeah. When did we make the change?
Right.
History component. Then you're needing a motion because you need to determine between, whether we want to look at a salary type view or a individual meeting.
Let me explain. What I want to do is if the council is at a position where you think that you're going to be able to discuss a more final product, rather than have staff bring it back two or three times, if we bring back an ordinance that reflects what you're looking for, a per meeting, we can even leave a blank in there versus a per month. It just gives us an opportunity to bring forward a more complete project for discussion and maybe not have to bring it back multiple times. So that's all. If the council would just like to have additional information brought back, we can certainly do that rather than prepare an ordinance, and that's fine too.
I mean, for me personally, I mean, I think we need the additional information.
Okay.
Then it would have an ability and understanding of, we all feel that there's an increase that's needed, whether it's, on a salary type deal or if it's a per,
right,
that we can provide more of a percentage, type A.
Okay.
X percent increase is appropriate. And having the history component would be useful in that. And then impact to budget would be useful in that. I mean, I know it's going to be nominal in the aggregate budget.
Okay. Anything further? Okay, Councilmember Kemp.
Thank you.
In addition to that, not a tree?
Yes. Oh, yeah. 100% agree.
Yeah.
What opportunities are available? Like I said, I have two or three opportunities. What training options are there for planning commissioners? And the kind of costs and what that would involve?
Okay, sounds good. We will we'll come back to this when we reach the extended agenda for putting it back on the agenda for further discussion. Thank you.
Thanks, Mayor.
You're welcome. The next, oh look, we're at Councilmember Reports. You're welcome, and thank you. I'm sorry. I'm trying to be respectful of time and everything. So I'm sorry. You're welcome. The next item is Councilmember Reports. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. Just a fair warning to our fair citizens of Monroe. My oldest son now has an instructor's permit to learn how to drive. So just fair warning to everyone. So that means I'll be in the car with them driving around a lot. So looking forward to that. Also, it's almost hard to believe that it's almost school time again. But it's bittersweet because I love summer, but I also love football. And end of summer means football's beginning. And getting excited about a lot of stuff going on in a row. I got a kid in cross country. It is so many great things going on here in this town this summer. Bittersweet as we, it's going to be August. It's going to be the fair. So many still great things, and yet September's right on the horizon. So love all the stuff that's going on, the movies and the music, and been able to enjoy quite a bit of that. Just thrilled with the stuff that the Parks Department's been doing, working with the Chamber, all that stuff. It's been so much fun. I haven't been able to make it to all of them, but some of those concerts have just been a blast. And everything from food to, and just the great weather. It's been crazy. So just really pleased with the way things go and the buzz about all the good stuff. It's really exciting. Yeah, there you go. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, obviously, we weren't here last Tuesday because a Night Out Against Crime was a great event. I didn't get to make it until the very end, but there was still tons of people out there, even past 8 o'clock. I think the dance competition or whatever it was. retention of folks there. Mm-hmm. It was a great event. Parks Department, Monroe Youth Football has started up. We're doing something completely different this year. For this month, I'm trying to remember how long we're doing it, but utilizing Sky River Park, so the city parks, for football. Traditionally, we've been on the Memorial Field, and it's been great. I think it took them a little bit to get out of the baseball mode, right? Because we asked for dimensions on the lines. We got it in feet instead of yards. It was hilarious.
In feet?
Yeah, we got. So we asked for like a 50 by 70 field, and we came and there was all these little squares painted, 50 feet by 70, and it was funny. We got a chuckle out of it. It got corrected, don't worry. But it was making that, shifting gears from.
I'm trying to remember, there was a movie. Movie in the 80s about rock concerts and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
In the wrong dimensions.
Yeah. It was.
It was football, right?
Yeah, it was.
It's not yard ball.
It was funny. I mean, they were squares about the size of the seating area there, and we're all like, "What the heck?" But we got it. We got it fixed. So it's great. It's been working out great. I mean, it's the first time we've ever, used that facility. So, great job there. And we also used the Miracle League Park for us. Even used that the park function is. For spaghetti feed, which was fantastic, and then we did our Legends tryouts are going strong, and using the Miracle League field there. So it's that time of year, as Gearing pointed out.
It is.
Lots of fun. The Jamboree is this weekend, so Monroe Youth Football will be taking over the city of Snohomish. We got to get that back here soon, and we'll be going straight on from there. That first home football game is just around the corner.
Awesome. Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Yes, I just want to apologize to the council for missing last week. I had the joy of sitting alongside 405 there because I threw a fan belt.
Were you in a hot lane?
And yeah.
The hot lane, wasn't it? Yeah.
I made it off the highway to an auto parts store there. I thought, I'll just buy a new belt, put it on. And remembered, I've got one of those cars where you have to take the bumper off and undo the radiator and all that stuff. It's about a 45-minute job just to get to the belt. So that's what happened to me. I didn't make it. I finally did make it home about, it was almost 9 o'clock when I finally got home. So, and then the next day I repaired the car, but I try to make it. Sometimes those things happen, and I apologize. So, other than that, that's all I had.
So. Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Is that the second time that's happened to you?
I had car stories.
I just wanted to say thank you to everyone for the night out against crime last Tuesday. I hadn't attended for 2 years, and this must have been the biggest one that they've ever had. I hope we have some attendance information.
They estimate 4,000.
Wow.
Four?
Yeah. That was a lot of people. It was fun.
And the dance competition was incredible to watch. It was hilarious. I had a really good time. Other than that, I really nothing else. I may be gone next week.
Okay.
But we'll talk about that long range.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Mike.
Hey. Just came back from vacation, so I'm sorry to have missed National Night Out. I think I've gone the last, I don't know, so many in a row. It's just a great, it's one of my favorite events, so I'm sorry to miss it, but I heard it was great. So, but nothing else, just getting caught up.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
I don't think you're sorry. You were on vacation. let's see. The night out against crime was wonderful. And I was also at Lake Tai for a birthday party. I'm just so impressed with the parks and looking forward to the concert and the movie, hopefully this weekend. Mm-hmm. So appreciate everything that's going on there. And it's good. Thanks.
Thank you. Mike.
This Thursday, 6:30 to 8:30, Lake Tai is Chance McKinney Country. So be ready for that. And then on Friday, it's the movie is Maleficent. And that's nice. The free movie activities start about 8 p.m. and the movie starts right around 9. In other news, some of you may have noticed the tennis courts and basketball courts of Lake Tai and also the basketball courts of Whale Street, they've been resurfaced. So now we're just doing final inspections on that. They look great. And we have Skyhawks playing tennis on the new tennis courts, breaking them. And on those tennis courts, we added striping for pickleball, too. So you play tennis and pickleball.
Nice.
Eight.
Yes.
A couple things I want to talk about just real briefly is the American Legion's presentation at the start of the meeting. I just want to mention that at last July's Park Board meeting, they also gave the same presentation to the Park Board, and the Park Board passed a motion that was supportive of what they're proposing as well. So I just wanted you to know that. So I see next step is for staff to work with the Legion. And our city attorney had just drafted a simple agreement between the city and the Legion. And also another thing is I'll investigate there may be some potential grant opportunities for this project as well. So I'll chase down some leads and I'll keep you informed of how that goes. And then the last thing I just want to mention is just something that came up tonight earlier. Was mentioned about with the voluntary water use reduction request that's out there is that I went through our parks gross acreage and so what we are doing now is we're volunteering a gross acreage water use reduction of approximately 14% throughout the park system. So I just looked at our park areas of the different parks that are irrigated and just made that determination as far as which ones we can crank down. We've got a lot of factors. We can't just really across the board it. So we kind of like look at the different irrigation systems, which ones we'll do. an example of why we wouldn't do it across the board. We don't want to lose some trees that have been stressed in summer, some shrubs. Also, athletic fields, it's really important to at least put some moisture on them for just the safety of the playing surface. You don't want to get it too hard where it's cracking and stuff like that. So that's all.
Thank you. Okay, Dan, anything?
The bond rating agency Standard & Poor's has reaffirmed the city's bond rating of AA- with stable outlook, which is really good. Today we entered into a purchase and sale agreement with D.A. Davidson to purchase the bonds that will be issued on August 25th, and then D.A. Davidson will sell them on the secondary market.
Thank you. Mr. Osaki?
Just because there's so much activity going on around Lake Tai, you might have noticed that the South Guys restaurant sign came down this
yes.
week, and a new sign for El Lago restaurant went up, yeah. and they're taking the same place as the South Guys restaurant. I don't have an opening date, but it should be very soon.
Thank you. Thank you. Chief?
Well, I too missed Night Out Against Crime due to the fact that I went back to the motherland for a vacation, and which I enjoyed thoroughly. The only issue that we had this last week was a pretty significant issue up at the high school where four individuals decided to vandalized the football field. The first 40 so yards were torn up pretty good. I don't know the value of it, but they were apprehended. Three of them were booked into Denny Youth Center, and one was booked into the county jail. And that's all I have on that.
Thank you, Chief. Brad, you've got a couple items?
Yes.
And Brad's on vacation, so he's not really here. The next time he's on vacation, comes to a council meeting, we will go to Hawaii so that we can be on vacation.
Next Tuesday.
Thanks for coming.
We'll just make it a vacation for everyone, right?
There you go.
Oh, the banner.
They are.
Now you're going back to vacation.
I know.
Yeah,
he's out.
He's dropping the mic right there.
So, banners. This is what we've got so far. The only one thing I'm not happy with is really stay. There's nothing really
stay-y.
Good about stay. Unless it looks kind of suggestive. A couple choices of Explorer, and we added the music one because I really like the graphics you came up with for music, even though it wasn't one of your five choices that you picked last time we did this. Recommendation is we do the bike, the shop. I want to change the color because I think that's too hard to see.
Can't see it.
Explore, that eat, and maybe music or not since we're going to get a good stay. So, comments?
Okay. Councilmembers? Councilmember Gamble?
I remember actually us talking about the music, and originally we said, well, no, you know, but there's music downtown.
Yes.
Yeah. A bit of it. I'm all for the music one. Plus, you got a music store that's still there.
Did you say it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, music is good. Anything further? Councilmember Hanford?
Bike shop, music eat.
Okay. Say that again. Bike shop.
Music eat.
Okay.
Works on score.
Well, I'm sorry. Are we picking five?
Those five.
Yeah, those five.
You can pick 28 if you like.
Those five. Thank you.
Good.
Okay, so you like those five. Great. Councilmember Cutterbeck?
I agree. Bike shop, music eat. I do not like this. I think it's cheesy. I don't know. I don't know.
Can you do just the mountains?
Need something a little bit. I like the person.
Well, you got to put the bad guy up?
Yeah, I don't.
If you're going to put that guy up, I'll put him with a smartphone with the Monroe app.
Yeah.
That's how you explore now, right?
That's where this started.
You could be listening to the music.
I like the explorer.
Okay.
Don't like the breath. I don't like that. But I'm only
I'm
one.
I'm glad you got that.
No, I would agree. Yeah. I mean, it looks like he needs a good skin cap.
Yeah, something
on
a little bit more. And I don't know if reading a paper is. Where the adventure starts here, too. Is there something else we can do about explore? That's all. Can he be hiking? I don't know.
So he can something. So he can look for something else that looks a little bit more hip on rather than saluting. Okay. Sounds good. Anything further?
That's it.
All right. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. Yeah, if you were going to do one of the stays, I would do the one below, but I'm with everybody else on the bike shop music and eat. I do like the bottom explorer better. This is cheesy for sure. I'm absolutely with Councilmember Cuddeback on that. I do like the Mariner's Wheel there, or the Mariner Rose there as well. I think that's cool. And somebody look at a map. I like the bottom one better. If you had to pick one of the two, absolutely like the bottom one better. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to see the guy with the map if you put the mountains there. Just, you know, you'd have to change that outline, I think. So, anyway, I'm just weighing in on what I like. Of the two that are there, I like the one on the bottom better. But the words that we have there are good. You know, minus this, if we're not going to roll a stay, then that's just fine. The other five. And then the change color in the shop, as you suggested, so you can see it a little bit better. Thank you.
Okay, so bike shop music eat it is, and
I'll explore too. But
we'll see what we can do to find something better with explore. We'll use the Compass Rose, and if we can find a way to integrate mountains and a person, great. Otherwise, we'll just play with it. Are you comfortable with us? Because we did want to try to order these in time for the fair days. Are you comfortable with us moving forward, or do you want to see them again, Councilmember Gamble?
I'm comfortable. But I mean, I do think you can figure out a way to get the artwork on the top one into the bottom of the with the dude. Yep. If you scoot the dude down.
Need the map guy. I'm a map guy when you want the maps.
But I think that would look cool.
Yeah. Okay, so you like the mountain and the Compass Rose and a dude
and the trees. I mean, it kind of, yeah. It's like exploring the, you know, it could be Apple Orland Park with the mountains in the background. Or
do you just want to get rid of the person altogether and just do that and that?
Well, I kind of like the backpack dude, but
okay, backpack dude.
Yeah. Just take the backpack dude, put him on the top one.
Yeah. You can make him smaller too.
There you go. Yeah.
There you go.
Shrink the dude. Repelling.
So we'll go ahead and I'll understand that council has some confidence that staff will put together something for explore, but we'll go with the bike shop music eat with changing the shop so that you can see it. And we'll just have confidence staff will come up with the right solution for explore. Okay? Sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Feilberg, anything further?
Yes.
Let's see. Your report, wastewater treatment report?
Wastewater treatment plant got their award from the state for not having any little circles on their monthly reports. Because you have to self-report, so when you fill out your monthly report, you have any things that exceed your requirements, you have to put a circle around it. And so then they turned them into country circles. And we didn't have any circles last year, so they did a really good job. And work continues downtown. They're putting the final touches on the paving between the paving blocks and the street. There's still a small gap in the paving blocks where they haven't found any. They ran out. They're looking for them. And the boulder covers are back ordered. And who knows when they'll show up. So those probably will not be done in time for the parade. And Cherney Place is busy working away. If you look, there's actually a roadway that comes down to Woods Creek Road now.
Oh yeah, love it.
And there's a big light there because most of their work they're doing hauling out is in the evening and then at night to not be congested with the traffic out on Highway 2. So that's all I have.
Thank you.
When that road's done, I can see the project in my head, but I can't remember. Is it a light or is it a roundabout that eventually
comes? Light.
Light.
A light.
Light, yes.
Yeah, there's debate on Facebook as to whether it's a light or a roundabout.
Well, they're wrong. It's a light.
Okay, anything further for Brad?
Always a debate.
All right, Gene, why don't you go ahead and give your couple of updates?
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. Two quick things. If you haven't had a chance to notice the new flag in the foyer that our staff put together, that was a flag that flew above the Capitol and was dedicated to us. So it's just out there on the right. If you get a chance to look at it, looks great. And then just a quick update on the lobbying services RFP. I sent an update to council, at least a few weeks ago, saying that we had not received any other proposals other than one, the first one that had come in. So we extended it for 30 days. That has gone and passed, and we have yet to receive any other proposals. So a couple of some direction from council. Some options are we can go back out, extend for another 30 days. We can reach out to AWC. We actually sent the RFP to them to post it, but we can have some dialogue with them to find out what other cities do. When do they post? Are we early? Are we late? Kind of get some parameters from them. We can interview the one person we have, or we could just not look any further and not move forward on it. So those are kind of the four options.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Are you looking for feedback now with regard to that?
Please.
I think it would be a disservice to not at least interview someone who's responded to an official thing that we have. I would also consider looking out to the other, one of the other suggestions you made, finding out what some, AWC and what some other cities do, is what time of year is it, things like that. So, and we've put out an official RFP. We have a response back from that, and I think we have an obligation to interview the person who's responded. So thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Cutterback.
Gene, do they meet the I don't know who the occupant is, do they meet the requirement of kind of what we, in your estimation, when you look at the, is it, are they worthy, you don't have to interview everybody who turns in an application, are they worthy of an interview? Because if they are, then I agree we should interview them. I mean, if they meet our criteria that we set out, we should interview them. If they don't, we don't need to. So
honestly, I have not looked at it because we extended the period.
Okay.
And so typically we wait until the period's closed, then we look at them all and grade them. So if that's the council's pleasure to go ahead and do that, we can come up with the group that's going to grade them and start moving in that direction.
Yeah, I just think that if they meet the criteria and they're a good applicant, then we should interview them, not wait any longer. If they don't meet the criteria, don't have to interview them just because we sent in a proposal. And then I agree with Councilmember Gehring that we should talk to AWC in the meantime and just see what else we can possibly do about it.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
I agree with everything Councilmember Kovac said. Thank you.
All right, anything further? All right, so Gene, you'll go ahead and Councilmember Gamble.
Was that Morse code?
Yeah, well, you were talking, it didn't say
it. My hand sometimes is in the way.
Yeah, it's all good. I would agree. I guess the other one, the question I would have is that we do know that there's other cities that currently use, so instead of just reaching only out to AWC, maybe actually contacting a couple of the other cities. Was there RFP process? Did they have a pool? Were they approached by one? You know what I'm saying?
Certainly. And when I first did the research prior to going out for an RFP, the majority of the cities have had the same people for years. And so they went out to RFP years ago, and they've maintained those relationships with the people they have.
My additional question to that would be, would we want to solicit the services, or at least for them to respond, like directly go to those entities that are representing some of those other cities and sizes?
We could certainly do that. We've not done that in the past. You mean like send a
packet,
announcement packet to them?
Yeah.
We could certainly do that as well. But that just hasn't been our practice in the past, as far as not just this RFP, but historically for other RFPs. Mm-hmm. We may make a phone call periodically, but the majority of the time we post in the appropriate areas, so it's a fair.
Right. I guess what I'm looking at this is that, I mean, the consensus among council is that we want to go this route. So if we want to go this route, I would want to try to get as many viable, you know, candidates to look at for services. And if they just don't know that, I don't know, whatever, they're not looking, and maybe ADWC will have the forum for us to put it in that would pick up those, you know, RFP responses. But anyway, that was just a thought.
Anything further?
Thank you.
Yep. Do you have anything else for administrative? Okay. Just a couple things for me. There was an article in the Monroe Monitor about a week ago about the Main Street program, and Chris Hendrickson was kind enough to meet with me the Thursday prior, interviewed me just about how the Main Street program works and about the investment the council has made in doing the budget amendment for the $25,000 for consulting services as sort of seed money to help a group out with, you know, creating a self-sufficient group. And asking for anybody that's interested to come forward. I coincidentally, when she read the paper, she had already had an appointment with me to talk about some other issues. And so Diane Forth, who has a high interest in the downtown, met with me, said that she was interested in pulling the group together, explained to her that this is a grassroots effort. If that's something that she'd like to do, I'd certainly be willing to, you know, to come and be at that first meeting just to say a couple introductory remarks and then leave so that they can become their own self-sufficient group. By meeting time today, there were approximately about nine people that had expressed an interest in helping out to start the Main Street program board. And I received an email from Diane after the meeting. I went, said hi for about 10 minutes or so, and then left. She said the meeting went really well. They're meeting again next week. Some of the representatives that were there include Ben, and I'm forgetting his last name right now, from who's a co-manager with Walmart, Teresa Willard, Diane Forth, and Una Workabaugh. Megan Manning and Chris Hendrickson, and then a couple other people. So I know that there's an interest in them trying to reach out to downtown businesses and residents, and again, this is a group that I'm letting them develop so they can come forward to us, because we do want them to be self-supporting in the future. So I'll keep you posted as I hear things on that, but I don't plan on being at the meeting because I don't want to stymie that group development. Went ahead and put in the packets this last week, again, the Monroe This Week. Some good news. If you take a look on page 2 of that, you'll see that sales tax revenues, everything else is up. The one thing you'll see in there is that our building permits for apartments or for multifamily is down. And the reason for that is that we got the 40 units last year right around this time for Monroe Family Village, so it's, you know, to have a repeat of that is a little uncommon. So we're down in that. Everything else is pretty stable. I mean, is showing positive increases rather. The one thing that's stable is the lodging tax revenues, and I think part of that is because we only have so many hotels in town. I met with the lodging tax. Actually, we did the lodging tax advisory board meeting today at 5:00. And so we've started that process for the hotel motel tax recommendations. And I think that's about it for right now. Does anybody have any questions for me? All right, let's go to the extended agenda.
Draft agenda for August 18th, 2015. Under announcements and presentations, we'll have Senator Kirk Pierce and a proclamation for the 2015 Monroe Fair Days. An agenda under unfinished business. We have discussion on the 2015 comprehensive plan update, discussing the proposed H30 contract amendments. Under new business, we'll be discussing fireworks regulations. And then the Legislative Affairs Committee, we do not have any items for that at this time.
Councilmember Gehring?
Fireworks regulations, that was gone that night. I think that was on there. What is the purpose of the discussion for the fireworks regulations?
The purpose of the discussion is to go over what our existing regulations are. There was some expression of interest to at least discuss the idea that in the event of a very, very dry year, that council might opt to authorize some limitations on the use of fireworks. So there are some jurisdictions that have done things like that, and it was supposed to be a discussion.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep. And okay, anything further?
Getting the Planning Commission.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We have time.
I'm looking at the agenda with everything that I have on my plate. There's no way I'd be able to get to it before September 1st.
Okay. Gene? I'm sorry. This would be Gene Ratt.
Utility rates for the 18th?
Yes.
Transportation impact fees the 25th, and that number will be the 1st.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Brad, I'm sorry, you said utility rates again. When is that coming back? The 25th?
I think so, the 18th.
Utility rates is the 18th, transportation impact fees is the 25th,
okay.
And downtown Bergen is the 1st.
Since we're going to be talking about other impact fees, should that topic be broadened out to impact fees?
Sure.
Okay. Because the interest...
Yeah, we're bringing back the combined total thing on the 25th. Okay. So we can just say impact fees then.
Okay. More broadly, right? Okay. Anything further, Gene?
Thank you.
Does anybody else have anything further for the extended agenda? Okay, one more item. I found out yesterday that first we have the Main Street project coming to an end, minus the covers on the west block and a small amount of tile. We have the Fair Days Parade happening on the 29th, and there was an interest in having a dedication. So Pam, who's our executive assistant, had been working with Una early yesterday, and Una got a press release out inviting people to a ribbon cutting on the 22nd at 11 o'clock. I then asked, when I realized that had already gone out onto Facebook, asked Pam to go ahead and email all of you to invite you to that. So she sent that out pretty quickly yesterday. But everybody, this is a celebration for the entire community, and it is to recognize the decision that you all have made to invest in the downtown. So I'm looking forward to as many of you being there as possible. The ribbon cutting should be around 11 o'clock. Una, and as you know, things can be fairly fluid in how things develop. Una was talking about having maybe some food out there. Maybe there was even discussion from somebody about talking to Molly from the Monroe Table to Farm Market. Farm to table farmers market, to have maybe a couple of the vendors there at the opening also, to make it sort of a small street fair. We've decided to use the east block rather than the west block, and the reason for that are a couple reasons. One, the west block won't be entirely complete with the bollards, but also the west block has been impacted with parking recently, and by having the event on the east block allows people to park on the west block and still go to the businesses there on the west block, and allows us to showcase the more completed side on the east block. So we'll get more details out, but I would ask you to encumber your calendars with like a 10:45 to about 11:30. We'll be inviting Department of Ecology, our state reps, state senator, and so on and so forth. So there will be a lot of invites going out on behalf of the city. Okay. Any questions about that? Okay. And I think that's all that I have. Coming right up on 2 minutes to, I'd love a motion for something. Councilmember Gamble.
To adjourn.
Second. I have a move to adjourn from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Gehring. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 6-0. Thank you. Have a great evening.
Oh.